All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight, feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant lands.
Alright, alright, alright. Oh, yeah. Hey, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we are here until 5 a.m. How's everybody doing? It is Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah. That's one artist, three songs. Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200. Welcome. Welcome, everybody. How's it going? Hey, remember, I am off tomorrow, Friday morning. I am also off Monday morning, because this weekend is a very, very, very busy weekend for me every year, and it is because the Flashback Weekend Horror Convention gets underway tomorrow, and I am there at the Crown Plaza Hotel O'Hare in Rosemont all weekend long, moderating Q&As and hosting things and hanging out and spending time with the horror geeks the whole weekend long. It's my favorite weekend of the year. It's also a very, very long weekend, so that's why I'm taking tomorrow morning off and Monday morning off. Dane Neal will be filling in for me both on Friday morning and on Monday morning for this long first weekend in August. It always coincides with Lollapalooza, and you couldn't pay me to go to Lollapalooza. There's not enough money in the world that you could give me to go to Lollapalooza. I can't imagine a fate worse than that, than death, than going to Lollapalooza. Now, at least the weather's not going to be horrendous like it has been, you know, the past bunch of years. But to stand outside,
it's like death by a thousand duck bites.
Yeah, I know. No way. I can't think of what would be a more miserable experience than going to Lollapalooza. Good Lord. Drunken morons with puka shells on. You got to walk from stage to stage to see mediocre bands play for 40 minutes. $8 for a bottle of water. You can get street food. Hey, you got a shish kebab? That'll be $20. Lollapalooza. I hate it. Anyway, I'll be inside air conditioning with a bunch of horror geeks. That's how you spend a weekend. Inside recycled air conditioning for 3 days straight. Hanging out with horror geeks and hanging out with people like Bruce Campbell and Sam Raimi and Robert Englund. That's a cool weekend. Standing outside with a bunch of morons watching mediocre music for 4 days. It's just such a nightmare. Ugh. National Mustard Day is on Saturday. So it's going to be a busy weekend. Busy weekend. I would suggest staying as far away from downtown as possible this weekend. So there you go. All right. So it's going to be a fun weekend, Flashback Weekend, and we're going to be talking about it this morning because Steve Procopi, who's my buddy and who has recently joined us here on the Nick DiGilio show as one of the official Monday morning movie critics, he's going to join us. He's a great guy. I've known him for many years, and he's been a part of the Flashback Weekend as long as I have. I've been it since the first Flashback Weekend in 2002. I've been a part of it, and I've hosted since, and so has Steve. And Steve and I and Heather Wixon is the third host. We moderate the Q&As, and we try to keep things going, keep everything, all the events that are happening in Ballroom 1, as we call it, Ground Zero, Ballroom 1, keep that schedule tight and moving. And also have fun and hang out with the celebs and be a part of all the events and all that cool stuff. But we're going to be here. Steve's going to jump in here live, and we are going to reminisce about some of the fun that we've had in Flashback Weekends past and preview all the great stuff that's going to happen this weekend. So Steve's going to be here live in studio. And we are also going to talk about now today, August 1st marks. Rabbit. August 1st, rabbit. Marks the anniversary of the beginning of MTV's broadcasting. It was in 1981. So it was 38 years ago. So 38 years ago today, MTV started its first broadcast. We're going to talk about that historic moment. We're going to talk about MTV. We're going to talk about its anniversary. We want to hear from you guys about the years that you watched MTV, if you still do. The best original MTV shows of all time, we'll get into that, and the most influential music videos of all time. So we are going to celebrate the 38th anniversary of the beginning of MTV, which began today. So that's coming up. And also, celebrities give really crazy gifts, because they're celebrities and they're all crazy. So we'll talk about that. And it's Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday! And that is one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. All right, let me officially say hello to my great producer, Tom Hush. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm excited for you.
I'm
because
shaking.
Because you've never been to the Flashback convention?
No.
And you have a connection, which means you're going to get to meet, like, Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell?
I can't tell you
how Robert England and all that stuff.
It's you know, I feel like this is the year where my horror fandom comes into full bloom.
Yeah, well, you'll have a lot of fun. I guarantee it. I know, as a horror fanatic myself, you know, I've been a part of this thing since 2002, and Mike and Mia Kurz, who put it together, there is not a better horror con that seriously. And I'm not just saying that because I've been a part of it since for all these years, but. Mike and Mia really care about it. They love it, and they run a great con.
Yeah,
they really do.
I got to meet Mia. Can't wait to meet Mike.
Yeah,
so it's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, they're really great people, and they love the horror genre. And I've known them forever. And so it's gonna be a great weekend. I know you're gonna have a lot of fun. This is the first time I've ever had like a coworker be excited about the Flashback convention. Most of the people that I worked with were like, yeah, have fun, moron. So this will be the first time I've ever actually brought someone who works on staff at WGN on
really?
My show to the convention.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm honored.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, we're going to have a good time, man. I guarantee you're going to have some fun. And you're going to spend a lot of money. I just want you to know that right now.
No, I've already, got all my credit cards ready to go.
Okay.
My girlfriend's going to be so upset.
Is she coming, or is it just going to be you solo?
It's just going to be me solo because her thing is anime. So she goes to like an anime convention. I don't go to that, even though I do appreciate what she loves.
Yeah.
I'm like, you just go and be yourself.
And I don't want to slow you down.
Yeah, I'm not gonna slow you down by being like, I'm tired, I'm bored, and the same goes for this. She enjoys horror movies. We go and see a lot of horror movies, but she's not as deep into it as I am.
Okay. That's cool. I married, my second wife was a horror fanatic. When we first started dating, and the first time I ever went to her apartment and I looked at her DVD selection and she had 5 Fulci movies, I was like, this could work out. This might be able to work out. It did for a while. But she used to come to the convention and hang out all weekend. And she would have a good time. She wasn't as crazy about me, although she did kind of lose her mind. I will say this. I could point out a single moment when Heather really did kind of lose her mind. And that was when she met George Romero.
Yeah.
That was like kind of like there's a picture of Heather, my ex, with George Romero. And I don't know if I've ever seen her. I don't know if there's ever been another picture of her smiling the way she was smiling in that picture. Like, I don't, it's like one of those deals where it's like, that person is so happy right now that she's standing next to George Romero. And it's a great photo. But that's about it.
I mean, that's a once in a lifetime.
Yeah.
Literally now, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it is.
God rest his soul.
And he was just such a great guy. And I, you know, because of my association with Flashback and because of my job here, as I mentioned before, I got to know George and meet him many times. And it was great. It was real special to meet him. It was really great to have my ex-wife go nuts when she met him. So yeah. But anyway, it's going to be a good weekend, man. I guarantee you. So I'm staying the whole weekend at the hotel, obviously, because mm-hmm. I have stuff I have to do during the day and,
of course,
and all that stuff. And again, you know, we had Sven Gulli on yesterday mm-hmm. morning on the show. And you guys got to come out tomorrow night because we're doing an evening with Rich Coase, 90 full minutes, celebrating 40 years of Sven Gulli. I'm honored and thrilled to be the host and moderator of that. Rich and I are going to be on stage. We're going to show clips and have a great time and take questions from the audience. And that's in ballroom number one. And it is tomorrow night, Friday night at 7 p.m. All of this takes place at the Crown Plaza Hotel, O'Hare, and that's in Rosemont. And all of it takes place starting tomorrow, late afternoon, Friday afternoon, and carrying on all through Sunday evening. And the whole weekend ends and climaxes with Bruce Campbell, Sam Raimi, and Ted Raimi in what will be a very memorable and very entertaining Q&A. So it's going to be a fantastic weekend. And again, I hope you guys can join us for the Sven Gulli thing, because it's going to be really special and a lot of fun. 40 years he's celebrating it. And I am honored, so honored to be the moderator and the host of that segment. So let's get into the newsroom. And it's Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Hey, good morning.
How are you, sir?
Doing very well.
All right. You guys still have another day of work before your weekend begins. But do you have a weekend plan?
Rub it in. No, yeah, Jeannie and I. Well, last weekend I had my two oldest sons and Jeannie was gone. This week I don't have them, but I do have Jeannie. So whatever we decide, I do know. She is of the appropriate age to go see that movie with Brad Pitt and
Yeah, of course, DiCaprio. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
So we're going to go see that for sure.
Well, you
and
should
just kind of just
great.
Spend some time together.
Now, can you hear Lollapalooza nonsense from your apartment?
Started this morning when I was trying to sleep. They were doing sound check. So yeah, it's going to be a loud weekend. But I can turn up. I just tell Alexa to
Can you tell Alexa to turn off Lollapalooza? Is that possible?
Yeah, I can try it. Let's see what she says.
Oh, that would I just can't imagine.
Yeah, it's pretty loud. And I'm on the 43rd floor, and I can still hear the bass.
Yeah, it carries. That stuff carries.
Yeah.
So anyway, well, have a great weekend.
Thank you, sir. You guys have fun. I can't wait to follow it on social media.
We're going to have great. We'll be posting a bunch of stuff on the social media, as we always do. It's just going to be great all the way through the whole weekend, and then we'll have stories to tell. Tom will have stories to tell Monday morning. I won't have stories to tell because I'm not going to be back till Tuesday morning.
Right.
But you can lay the groundwork.
Yeah, I'll get everyone ready.
Get everybody ready for all of the madness that takes place.
I'm excited for Tom. This is cool.
No, so am I. I really am. I'm really excited for Tom. You know, I've been doing this for a long time, and so I'm excited. I will say this: I'm like way excited to meet Sam Raimi.
Yeah, man.
Because Sam Raimi's I've met him. I interviewed him, but I interviewed him in 1990 for Darkman. That's the only time I ever interviewed him. It was a 20-minute interview that I did with him at the Trib building at the station. So I did meet him, and he's not going to remember me at all. But, you know, since then, he's had a modicum of success.
A little bit.
Yeah. So that's the only time I ever interviewed him. So, all right. Hey, in the PPG Paints green room, the beautiful, unbelievable, picturesque, unbelievable view. If you ever come down here and you're a guest on the show, we will put you in the beautiful, comfortable PPG Paints green room. That's where Steve Procopi is right now, and we're bringing him in from the PPG Paints green room. And Steve Procopi here, one of the hosts at Flashback and one of the critics that works with us here on Monday morning, will come in, and we're going to talk Flashback weekend for this weekend and reminisce about the other cool stuff from the years before. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. And Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6. Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Stay connected on our Facebook page, too. Like us right now. It's facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. Flashback Weekend Horror Convention starts tomorrow, and it goes through Sunday. And I've been a part of it since the very first one. In 2002, and it's always great. And Mike and Mia Kurz put together an unbelievable lineup every year, and this year is no different. And joining me live in studio to talk about it is our good friend Steve Procopi, who you can hear every Monday morning reviewing movies here on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Hi. How are you? Thanks for having me. Good. Yeah. And thank you for the Monday morning gig, too. That's
no,
a lot of fun.
It's great, man. It's great to have you on, you know? Yeah. I mean, because, you know, you and myself and Eric, we've known each other for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And have worked together a lot, so I think it works out great. I think all three of us sound really good. I'm not going to say me, but I think you and Eric sound great. So.
Well, I will say I'm waiting, and I know it's going to happen, but I'm waiting for that big blow up where we all disagree, or one of us disagrees with the other ones about something really.
I'm trying to think if there's a Wes Anderson movie coming out. That will probably blow Eric's head apart.
There'll be something before that. But
yeah, I'm sure there will.
We have disagreed on things. I'm not saying we haven't, but I'm talking about...
Like a
fight. I want to fight with somebody.
Trust me, it'll happen. It'll happen. And it usually happens with Eric. Eric's usually the guy who's got the shortest fuse of anybody who's been a part of the movie review.
He's certainly been very adamant about not liking things, but I want someone to go after somebody else.
Yeah.
Like attack them on a personal level.
Okay. We can do that for you. I'm sure that'll happen
immediately,
at some point. That all started with that bastard Colin. Because we all know how personal the attacks are that Colin Suter gives out. He's a great guy. And he did a great job for many years here.
Absolutely.
On the show. He's not going to be gone. You know, we'll have him come back and stuff. Hey, here's another thing. Since, you know, you're on the Monday morning movie reviews, we got to do the best of the decade.
Well, yeah. And Eric's doing like something with his podcast that's going to kind of do it's somehow going to incorporate that a list that where multiple guests are going to kind of contribute to, I think.
To like the best of the decade?
And I'm supposed to be the first one to do it with him, and I'm still not exactly sure how this is works.
It's going to be interesting to pick the rest of the best of the decade, because I already know what the best movie of the decade has been. And it's Fury Road.
Yeah.
Well, I don't I don't have to think about it. It's like, what's the best movie of the past decade? It's Mad Max Fury Road.
That's the thing. Because I can just look at my list for the last 10 years and go, what was number one each year? But that might not necessarily be
It changes 10. Every time. Every time you do a decades list, you can go, well, I'm just going to go back and look at my top 10. And then you reevaluate
it.
When we did the top 10 of the aughts, my number one of the top 10 of the aughts was not even in my top 10 list the year it came out.
What was it?
25th Hour.
Oh, yeah.
25th Hour is my favorite movie of the aughts, but I had a negative, not as positive reaction to it that everybody else had. Right. So I didn't include it. And then I saw it a second time and a third time, and then I was like, my God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my favorite movie of the aughts.
Hmm. Okay.
So, yeah. Anyway, so that'll be coming up as well. Tell everybody what you do over at the Music Box.
I'm the my title is public relations manager, but that sort of encompasses a lot of things. You know, writing press releases to the local press, pitching people on story ideas, or if there's like a guest coming in or something.
Yeah.
I sometimes will select a moderator for different Q&As or just do it myself, which I've been doing for years there.
Right.
Anyway, and just generally being around, especially when there's talent coming in, just to sort of be that liaison between the venue and the person, so the movie. I don't know. It's pretty much a great gig. I love it. It's part time, but I was there all weekend when Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was playing.
That's one of the reasons I wanted to bring it up, is because the only theater in Chicago that's showing Once Upon a Time in Hollywood in 70mm is the Music Box.
In the middle, it's the only theater in the middle of the country that's playing it anywhere that isn't on a coast.
Yeah.
in this country, there's also one in Toronto, which is fairly close. But it's we Colleen Weaworth had the second biggest per screen average of the opening weekend.
Yeah.
We had one of the top 10 highest just venue grosses of the weekend. That includes theaters who have it on like four or five screens.
Right. That's amazing.
Yeah. So
listen, I want to talk about that because we got to hit the news here.
Yeah.
But we'll get to flashback, remembering great flashbacks past, and looking forward to the great flashback this weekend. But I definitely want to talk about because we didn't get a chance. I was sick on Monday morning.
Sure enough.
So I do want to talk about Once Upon a Time.
Broke my heart.
In Hollywood. With you. Okay. The news is coming up right after we hear this. All right, welcome back. Hey, listen, what the hell happened after that first album? I'm still trying to figure out what dry, quote-unquote, dry beer. I think it was Michelob Dry that was. You remember the in the 80s, the thing was dry?
I remember the name. I don't really think there I was ever like, grasped the concept.
There was like Bud Dry, and then there was, you know, and then they also did Ice.
Yeah,
Ice House is still around, but they had like Bud Ice. There were all the major brands had Ice, and a lot of the major brands had Dry, and that was in the 80s. And that Ministry song "Every Day Is Halloween" was played during one of the Dry beer commercials. It was the theme. I want to say it was Michelob Dry, but it was one of them. Anyway, we're back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How's it going? It is Thursday morning. Triple Play Thursday. We'll get those. We'll play those later on at 312-981-7200. We're going to celebrate the 38th anniversary of MTV, which began on this date in 1981, if you can believe it. So we're going to go back in history and celebrate some of that stuff. But right now, our good friend Steve Procopi is here. You can hear him every Monday morning reviewing movies along with myself and Eric Childress right here on WGN. And where can they read your reviews?
On thirdcoastreview.com. It's all the time now, but it's like every day practically. But
okay. Thirdcoastreview.com. Yeah. We were talking about the 70mm screenings of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But the reason you're here is because for the next 3 days, you and I are going to see each other.
Yeah.
For a ton of time.
Non-stop.
For non-stop for 3 days straight, moderating Q&As and trying to keep things on schedule in the ballroom and hanging out with celebrities and buying things and just in general spending a weekend with a bunch of horror fanatics. And it's always a highlight. Now, you've been there since the beginning too, right?
Absolutely,
since 2002.
I've even done the satellite conventions that Mike and Mia have done over the years, like the Buffy, the Angel, the Twilight.
Oh, right.
The Buffy ones were my favorite because I never watched the show. I had no idea who most of the people were who were there. A couple of them I did. And I was moderating Q&As with everybody, and I was the only host.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how did I pull that? I still don't know how I did it.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I know Mike approached me, you know, on that one as well, and I was like, I don't like the show. I never watch it. So you did a good job with it.
At least the Twilight movies I had seen, so I could do that.
Yeah, but that's another one that I would not be able to do. So we'll talk about flashback and go back to some of the more memorable moments of flashback over the years because we've been there for so long, and some of the great things that are planned for this weekend. But let's talk first about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, since we didn't get a chance to review it. Now, I know Eric liked it too, correct?
Yes, he did. Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't imagine him not liking it. I thought it was great. Now, I've not seen it in 70.
I haven't. Technically, I haven't either.
Oh, because you're
not
just
all the way
through. You're working. Because
the press screening was not in 70; it was in 35. Mm-hmm. And I sort of caught bits and pieces. I made a point. I introduced several screenings of it at the Music Box over the weekend, and I made sure to always sit in the last 15, 20 minutes just to listen to the audience lose their minds.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Tom went to the first showing last Thursday at the Music Box.
The early or late.
For the 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock.
Oh yeah, I wasn't there for that. Yeah, but I was there for the later one.
Yeah, and it was a he said it was a big crowd, and like you just said, the last half hour of that movie, the last 20 minutes, people were just losing it.
People were cheering like it was like the last days of Rome. People were going ballistic.
Yeah, one of my favorite lines, and I'm not giving anything away. One of my favorite lines in the movie occurs during, because I think Brad Pitt is
very funny.
Ridiculously
very
funny. And so is DiCaprio. His meltdown in his trailer, mm-hmm. after when he blows his lines and is really...
My favorite scene of his is in his robe yelling at the Manson people who are there to kill people.
That's hilarious, too.
He literally is like, get out of here, dirty hippies.
Yeah. But my favorite is like, is my favorite line, and there are so many of them, but I just love the part near the end. I'll do it out of context because you guys will know what I'm referring to, but people who haven't seen it, I'm not ruining anything for them. But at one point, Brad Pitt points and goes, "You were on a horsey."
That's right.
Well, I think it's great. Yeah. I think it's you know, I loved Hateful Eight a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was great. The only, you know, movie that I've had issues with that Tarantino has made has been Django. I think it's way too long, and I don't think it just kind of has. It's just not as. It seems like a mess to me. That's the only one of his movies that just seems like kind of scattershot and all over the place.
I like it, but it's the one I've rewatched the least.
Yeah.
So yes, I think.
Oh no, I don't dislike it.
Yeah.
Let me just say it. I don't dislike it. You know, I mean, I think it's fine.
Yeah.
But it's the only one that I have like kind of issues with big time.
This one, Once Upon a Time, is like top three Tarantino.
Oh no,
for
kidding!
Me.
No, I mean, question.
Like, I don't exactly know where, but it's in the top three.
No question. Pulp Fiction's still my favorite.
Yeah. And I think Jackie Brown is still my second favorite.
But this one, man, it's just.
I guess that means it's number three.
It's so It's just so beautifully done and shot. It's such a love letter to that time period and to
it's
to old
a time
Hollywood.
And place. And I know, and people are getting hung up on the fact that they're not catching all the references, and you don't have to.
No.
You know it's an immersion more than like anybody else who's maybe ever made a period film in recent memory.
Yeah.
And you know, it's what it really is, and you don't have to know anything about history to understand this, is that there was like a certain type of entertainment, TV and movies, that was falling out of favor,
right,
just as this other thing that Polanski and Sharon Tate represent that is coming into favor.
Right.
And unlike maybe anywhere else in the country, the haves and the have-nots live right next door to each other sometimes. And that's really what this movie's about, is about these passing in the night eras of Hollywood. And
it's a very sweet movie.
Yeah.
And a very romantic movie.
There's some very moving scenes in here. Most of them having to do with DiCaprio, but even that ending is like, because people are getting so hung up on this Margot Robbie not having enough lines, but she's the character I felt the most for, because, and what's funny, like people are like, oh, I wanted to know more about her. What do you know about her? You know probably one thing above all other things, and that she was murdered horribly when she was pregnant.
Right.
And Tarantino's like, but there was so much more to her than that. She was sweet. She was like full of joy and very like embracive of other people and like and tolerant of people like Polanski, who was kind of a horrible person, especially when he was in Hollywood. And He wants to put that in our heads. It's like,
sequence, the set of sequences, because it's intercut with other stuff.
But
her watching the wrecking crew,
watching the real Sharon Tate in the wrecking crew,
which was an interesting choice. Very freaky. but just that whole thing about like her seeing her name on the marquee and telling the box office person that's her.
Yeah.
And like very happily taking a picture next to the poster, all of that stuff was lovely.
It's a stuff inside where all she wants to do is entertain people and have people just think she's an okay actress.
Right.
Tarantino isn't trying to say if she had lived she would have been so much more. He's just saying, but what she was really beautiful and wonderful.
Yeah.
beyond her looks, yeah, and just like a sweetheart of a person that probably would have been friends with you if you'd ever met. And
all that stuff just comes like shining through. And yeah, the relationship between DiCaprio's character and Brad Pitt's character is just fantastic. And you know, it's just this, and when the insanity explodes during the last 20 minutes, mm-hmm, it's like, it's so shocking and like also ridiculously hilarious because the movie up until that point has been this really enveloping, sweet, meandering little love letter, you know, time period love letter. So when it goes nuts,
yeah,
I mean, and it goes nuts during the last 20 minutes,
And I don't even think unpredictably so, because Tarantino wouldn't have just let that play out the way it really did. That's not like his bag. That's not his. I'm not just saying that because of Inglourious Basterds. I'm just saying I don't think he would have enjoyed making scenes of what really happened. But there, at the same time, there's this weird tension that goes through the whole movie because you think that's what it's leading to.
Well, the scene on the ranch.
The ranch. Oh, that's my favorite
sequence. I think it's the best long sequence in the entire film.
Best thing, it might be the best like edited scene I've ever seen of his.
It's
like,
so, you know, one of his movies. The build of tension in that. And also, like, this, it's still funny, but it's really tense. And when Brad Pitt decides I'm going to go over to the house and see if, you know, Bruce Dern is there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and Dakota Fanning is horrifying in the movie. And that whole thing, that whole build is fantastic leading up to the scene with Bruce Dern, which, of course, is hilarious. And then leading up to the flat tire sequence, which is also fantastic. Yeah.
Did you figure out who Margaret, what's her name? Qualley. The girl who plays Pussycat.
Margaret Qualley. That's Andy McDowell's daughter.
Okay, you did figure that. I heard you talking about it.
Andy McDowell's daughter. I had a hard time. I didn't even recognize her because I watched Fosse Verdon religiously.
Right.
I didn't even recognize her, that she was the same person who played Anne Reinking.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's nominated for an Emmy for it.
Right.
But yeah, that's Andy McDowell. He hired a lot of people's daughters.
Every woman, at least, in that scene was either a child actress or is the daughter of someone famous, because Rumor Willis is there. Even Lena Dunham has her parents are really famous artists,
right? Dakota Fanning, and you've got
Hawk, Maya Hawk is in it.
What's her face? Harley Quinn.
Harley Quinn Smith.
Who I didn't even see, but I know she's in there too.
She's in like one shot,
but she's there. So anyway, but the thing is, you know, but first of all, congratulations to the Music Box for having such a successful run. But I think it says volumes about how well received this movie has been and will continue to be, because this is one of those movies, you know, I know Hateful Eight didn't do very well at all, but Hateful Eight was much more of a heavier and more specific movie, mm-hmm, you know, and just in one location. This is, and it didn't have Brad Pitt in it. You know what I mean? A shirtless Brad Pitt, you know. But this is just, I think it's easily one of his best movies.
Yeah.
And I loved it. And it's also one of the funniest movies of the year. It's clearly the funniest movie he's ever made, as far as I'm concerned. He's made, there are scenes that are hilarious in a lot of his movies.
Yeah.
Like the Larry Bishop strip club scene with Michael Madsen in Kill Bill 2, which is one of my favorite scenes ever. And one of the hardest I've ever laughed at a Tarantino. But this thing constantly is funny. It's funny throughout the entire run, like really, really, really funny.
Yeah.
So I thought it was great. And I'm gonna make it out to see it in 70 at some point.
So will I at some point.
And again, we're not on this Monday. You've seen Hobbs and Knobs, right, already?
Yeah, I saw it last night.
What did you think?
Well, my review is up, actually,
it's
so
up.
You can see it. It's I gave it about a 2.5 stars.
Sounds about right.
And you know, here it is. It's that guy who did Atomic Blonde and Deadpool 2. Atomic Blonde, I had problems with everything that wasn't a stunt sequence.
Right.
And I had the same problem here, except it's even more so because so many of the stunt sequences are CG now.
Yeah.
And it's such a bummer. And it's in it, but it pretends like it's something that's grounded in reality, but it's so not. And I'd never expect a Fast and Furious anything to be grounded in reality.
Yeah.
But they're kind of making a big deal about that. And like, if you're going to do it, lean into it. Like, there's still some really funny stuff in it.
And,
but a lot of the jokes don't land. There's some weird awkward cameos that I didn't even know. I mean, big people that I didn't even know were in this thing.
Oh, okay.
So,
all right.
But you should see. I mean,
no, I'm going to go. I'm not going to be able to see it this weekend, I'm definitely going to go. I've seen all the Fast and Furious movies, some of them multiple times.
Yeah.
So, all right, Steve, hang on for a second. All right, we'll take a break, and we got more with Steve Procopi here, and we're going to jump into some flashback talk as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. If you got anything to say here, 312-981-7200. If you saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, you want to leave a comment text-wise or call us. If you saw it in 70, we'd love to hear you because at the music box. 312-981-7200. More coming up right after this. Old Moon Unit. welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Steve Procopi is with me. Steve, welcome back.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the other flashbacks from the past.
Yes.
And I can click on to, I'm on the website right now because I'm going to forget which was what.
You're going to make me remember.
No, I'll remind you. Yeah. Last year was Brad Dourif.
Sure.
Fiona Dourif, Tom Holland. There was a Friday the 13th, the final chapter reunion. Right. There were a bunch of Jasons.
Yes.
My future ex-wife, Dana DiLorenzo, and Ray Santiago were there. A bunch of people from the Chucky movies.
Oh, right.
A bunch of people from the Fright Night movies, including the lovely Amanda Bierce, who saved the day when the inflatable screen collapsed before the movie started. And Charles Band was there. Serena Vincent was there. Michael Berryman. And so on. And of course, Felisa Rose was there. John Russo was there. We got to talk with John Russo that last year.
We talked about Romero.
About him working on Night of the Living Dead with Romero.
Right.
And that was a fun one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots
that
of
was
fun.
Actually a good. Yeah. Well, I mean, having Holland there, because I don't had he been to a flashback?
I don't think
before?
So.
We've had a lot of his actors represented there before, but he's a gem. We had him at the Bruce Campbell Horror Film Festival before it became Cinepocalypse in one of the first years, and he was great. And I'd never met him before, and we hung out a lot, so he was terrific.
Yeah. And then the year before, that was 2018. 2017, Robert Englund, who's there this year. Lance Hendrickson, who's there this year. There was Sean Patrick Flannery and the guys from Boondock Saints.
Fun Q&A.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, I totally forgot about that. A lot of the Nightmare Girls who are going to be there this year, Amanda Wiss, Heather Langenkamp, Lisa Wilcox, Tuesday Night, she's going to be there.
She's singing again, I think.
She is.
Too.
She's going to sing Nightmare. So a lot of those people are coming back. Mm-hmm. And who else did we have here? For Freddy versus Jason, Nancy Loomis was there.
Right.
And, of course, Curtis Armstrong.
Oh, right.
And and Donald Gibb, representing, you know, Revenge of the Nerds. Ken Foray, and we did a nice Q&A with him about George, because that was the year that George died.
Yep.
William Forsythe, Victoria Price, she was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Vincent Price's daughter. It was one of my favorite Q&As I've ever done was her. She's got so many great stories. And of course, you know, Sven is there every year.
Sure.
And that was a fun one too. Were there any other that Q&A, the Boondock Saints Q&A was just
I gotta say, we've been pretty lucky over how many years now?
17, 2002, 17 years.
That we haven't had like too many duds or too many Q&As that were just with people who didn't really want to be A-ing our Qs.
Yeah.
So, but that Boondock Saints one, which, I mean, those guys were energetic, we'll say that.
Yeah.
They were very happy to answer questions, but they were barely contained.
Yeah. And then the year before, 2016, that was the Scream reunion.
Right, that was great.
Which was really great, with Neve Campbell and then Malcolm McDowell was there, Matthew Lillard was there, Skeet Ulrich, Julian Sands.
That's one of my favorites because I love that guy.
Yeah, Julian Sands?
I think he's like a legitimately great actor that had his moment and then kind of vanish, but man, he always had an impact on me. Yeah, I was really excited that he was there that year.
Didn't the 31 reunion get out of control? Some dude was drunk and grabbed a mic.
I was going to say, I know there was one that Malcolm McDowell was on the panel for. So that must have been it.
And it's Malcolm McDowell, Meg Foster, Jimmy Gleason.
That there was just, but it was one guy, and like I grabbed the mic away from him, and Malcolm McDowell read him the riot act, and then he went away. So. Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, that same guy who was loaded, who grabbed, got booted.
Eventually,
he got booted.
Maybe, yeah.
Don Coscarelli was there because that's when Phantasm Remastered was
screened. That's right. That's one of the few times we've done two screenings of the same movie.
And too. I went to both of them. Rachel True, so there was like a little craft.
That was the craft thing.
Meg Foster, we got her. Some of the girls from Friday the 13th, he got Amy Steele and Adrian King. By the way, Amy Steele and Adrian King look exactly the same as they did in the movie. They look exactly.
You're sure you're not looking at an old picture?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm just saying when I saw them.
Oh, yeah.
Eugene Clark, who was Big Daddy in Land of the Dead.
Oh, yeah.
I did his Q&A. Do you know about this Q&A?
Do I know about it?
Yeah, you weren't in the room?
I'm there for every Q&A. Yeah,
okay, well, I didn't. This is the one where I didn't need to be on stage. Like, I introduced
him. He just talked.
He did, like, stand-up.
Oh, yeah.
And he was just on stage. And here's the thing about it. He came out, and I was like, hey, you know. And then he finally was like, okay, you want to ask me a question? Ask me a question. I asked him a question. He's like, that's a dumb question. And so he was, like, doing bits and stuff on stage. And I was just kind of sitting there, you know. And I was looking at Sean in the back, and I'm just shaking my head like, I don't need to be here, man.
And that happened. That actually, like, that happens. You know, just at this most recent Cinepocalypse, we had Michael Ironside there for a Total Recall 70mm screening.
Yeah.
And Josh did the Q&A, and I don't even know if he got a question out. And Ironside just started talking. And Josh, after about 10 minutes, just sat down in his chair. He goes, I'm here if you need me.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what happened. But here's the punchline in the whole thing. And he was fine. I didn't care. You're making my job easier.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to think of anything. I'll just sit here. You can do all your bits and everything. But the thing was, he had his phone, and, you know, he was selfieing while he was walking down the middle aisle.
Live streaming it, or
I think
taking
pictures? No, he was just like recording it.
Oh, yeah.
So he was recording it, and he had the phone out there and everything. And then, like, he does the whole half hour. Tells hilarious stories, lots of stand-up-y, kind of jokey, you know, hey, kind of stuff.
That.
And then, you know, we finished the thing, and then, like, later I'm walking through the vendor room, and I heard from Heather Wicks. By the way, we should mention Heather Wicks.
Yes.
She's the other host. It's the three of us. We split up duties. That's going to end up on the show next Friday. She told me that it never recorded. Like he did not get any of the recording.
Yeah.
And so, but I loved Big Daddy. Big Daddy is one of my favorite zombies ever in the Romero world.
Yep.
So, okay. Steve, hang on, okay?
Yep.
All right, Steve Procopi is with us. We'll talk more Flashback and preview all the really cool stuff that's happening this year at Flashback right here on WGN. News is after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6. Coming up here, we've got this. Today marks this day in history. MTV began broadcasting in 1981. So it is 38 years we've had... MTV around. So we're going to talk about some of the best original MTV shows of all time, some of the most influential music videos, and some of your MTV memories. And celebrities are insane, and they give crazy gifts to people. So we'll talk a little bit about that. It is the weekend of Flashback. It's our Flashback convention. And it starts tomorrow. That would be Friday, August 2nd, and it goes through Sunday, August 4th. And a ton of really, really great things are happening. And Steve Procopi is with me, who is has been a host and a part of the Flashback Convention since 2002, like myself. And we've got lots of great memories about some of the Flashback stuff in the past. Steve, welcome back.
Thank you.
The thing that was very distinctive about the very first one was that it was, I think it was the Midwest premiere of Bubba Hotep.
Yes. Well, I always thought it was like,
like the world premiere?
Or at least the U.S. premiere?
I think
I don't know where outside the U.S. it would have played,
yeah.
But I always got the impression it was the premiere.
Yeah,
so.
And it was a year before it was released.
Yeah.
That was a year, because it didn't get released till fall of 2003.
Right.
And this was in the summer of 2002. Bruce was there.
Mm-hmm.
They screened it at the Pickwick.
Pickwick, yeah.
And it was great, obviously.
Yeah.
And but it was a really fun time, but it wasn't as big and crazy as the fest has gotten now.
No. I mean it was strange, because it wasn't even like we had the screenings at the Pickwick, and then we had to drive to the hotel, which I don't even remember what hotel it was.
I don't even remember the hotel it was there either.
I probably had brought this up before, but the thing I remember most about that year is that we had Herschel Gordon Lewis there, who was a hero of mine, and I found out through the weirdest, I don't even remember how I found this out, that he wasn't making movies anymore, but he was writing, and I forget the subject he was writing on, something economics or something, but we were working, because I had a day job then at a publishing company, we were working for the same trade publishing company.
Oh, is that right?
And I mean, different magazines, but same company, and he was right. He wasn't doing anything with horror. It had nothing to do with movies. It was something much more mathematical. And,
yeah.
Because he was a brilliant guy.
I remember I had him on the show for that. He was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant guy.
But he changed my high school experience, literally. Like, those were where I first saw Blood Feast and the Gore Gore Girls. I'm like, oh, I didn't know people made movies like this that far long ago. And completely altered, as many films do, it altered the way my thinking went about horror and about films and about what was allowed in certain eras.
And I remember in 2003, that was the first time that I'm not looking at the page, I'm just remembering now, that was the first time that Robert Englund showed up. I think
he was there that first year. Wow.
No, that's 2002. Oh, was the first year.
Oh, 2003,
2003
yeah,
was when he came. And and I remember PJ Souls was there. That was the first time that she was there. A whole bunch of other really great celebrities. Now, do you remember the time? I don't remember exactly what year it was when they did it in October. It was the only time that they ever did it in October.
Yeah, and I almost want to say that might have been the year I couldn't do it, because my friend got married the same weekend. My best friend, and all the wedding stuff took place that weekend. So
yeah,
I do think I had to skip that weekend.
Yeah.
Was Lance there that
he
year
was?
Too? Yeah.
Because they screened Near Dark.
Right.
And Tim Thomerson was there, and Jeanette Goldstein was there.
Right.
So they had a reunion of sorts of Aliens.
Yeah. Yeah.
For that. But I'm looking at this. I think that was 2010.
Okay.
And
that's more recent than I would have thought. Okay.
I think that's when it was, if I'm not mistaken. But then it was 2009 was Robert Englund was there then too.
Yeah.
This is the one. This is the one. It was 2009. That's when they did it in October. That's when they did it in October. It was Lance Henriksen, Jeanette Goldstein, Tim Thomerson, Tony Todd, Ginger Snaps reunion.
Sure.
Krista Campbell. You remember Krista Campbell from 2001 Maniacs and Day of the Dead?
Yes.
The remake?
Yeah.
Catherine Lee, Charles Band, David Crawford, and local guests. And, of course, you know, that would be led by Sven Gulli.
Yes.
So it was an interesting year where they tried to do it at a different time of year.
That second one, when the first time Englund was there, I remember Mike, as he does with you, we always try to pick one guest for each year that I would do like a long form interview with.
Right.
For when I was with Ain't It Cool. And I'm talking sometimes, and in the case of Englund, that particular year, I interviewed him for about 2 hours straight and covered his entire career. And then that sort of set up a few years later, we did sort of a inside the actor studio style Q&A, like we had nicer chairs and like a backdrop.
Yeah, right.
And I think it was filmed for something, but And so that's I think that's the reason we're doing it something like that again this year,
right?
Right after this Svengoolie tribute, is we're going to do like kind of a sit down with Robert for a half an hour
before the 35th anniversary screening of the original Nightmare.
And we'll bring out Heather Langenkamp and Amanda Wiss and watch the watch Nightmare again.
Amanda Wiss.
Yeah,
has the distinction of being the very first victim of Fred Krueger.
Right, I know. That's exciting.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I think one of the most memorable kills in all of the Nightmare series, because I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, what the hell is going on? The thing about the first Nightmare on Elm Street, which is different about the others, and I happen to like most of the other
ones.
Sure. But the first one's genuinely scary. And there aren't a lot of smart-ass quips made after each
murder. It's not a comedy.
No, not at all. It's a really, really scary movie.
Yeah.
And then it did, the series got sillier. Very entertaining. Mm-hmm. Robert Englund, fantastic. You know, and wonderful, crazy special effects. Mm-hmm. It was a training ground for directors like Rennie Harlan and Chuck Russell, Jack Shoulder. You know, all these guys would go on, you know, and then it got scary again when Wes Craven came back and made New Nightmare.
Right. Well, what's funny is that Wes Craven was such a smart guy, and I was lucky enough to interview him a couple times over the years, and he researched like people's most common fears and things that people would have nightmares about, like a lot of like just regular nightmare fuel, really, and he somehow worked it into that first movie, and that's why I think it strikes a chord with so many people, is that it feels like, oh, I've had that dream. I've had that nightmare.
It's one of those movies that came out of nowhere. Yeah. Like, I mean, I big Wes Craven fan. And Wes Craven went through a period where he'd do a great movie and then a really bad movie and then a great movie and a really bad movie.
It was kind of that period was his entire career.
Yeah. But he would do like his great movies were so great, though.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, like I think Serpent in the Rainbow is one of his absolutely best movies. But when he came back and did New Nightmare, genuinely scary stuff. And it was meta before Scream.
Yeah.
Like that movie, when Scream came out, Wes Craven was the perfect guy to direct it because it's like, look, I did this already. And it was called New Nightmare. Only Scream was much funnier, you know, and it was much lighter. But yeah, now we're talking about this and it's like, it's amazing to me that that Tobe Hooper and Wes Craven and George Romero have all passed away too young.
Yeah,
you know, three legends in the horror genre.
Yeah.
So, but
yeah. No, I was. I mean, like I said, Wes was a guy I got a chance to interview a few times over the years, and I mean, just never disappointing. Yeah. So low key.
Yep. Like, I interviewed him a few times too, and he was like, great. And I never interviewed Tobe Hooper.
No, me either.
And I interviewed Romero,
obviously,
million times. But.
But the other thing about Nightmare I remember is that like a lot of the other slasher films at the time were sort of subject to physical laws, like movies where you realize anything is possible,
right.
Nothing is off bounds, not out of bounds, and. Yeah, there are no limits anymore.
So if you want to see it on the big screen, it's going to be screened at 9:35 on tomorrow night, Friday night. But it's going to be preceded by Steve moderating a conversation with Robert Englund, and that'll be at 9. Always very entertaining. And Steve does, you know, great with the Q&As. And then Heather Langenkamp and Amanda Wiss will come out. Tuesday night we'll perform the song Nightmare, which was from Dream Master.
Mm-hmm.
And then the movie will start at 9:35, the original Nightmare on Elm Street. And preceding that, of course, is what we were talking about before, an evening with Rich Coase, celebrating 40 years of Svengoolie, and I'm moderating that, and it's going to be 40 years of Sven. We're going to have great clips, and we're going to have a great time doing it. And Sven usually just comes on Saturday.
Right.
Rich usually just shows up. He does photo op, and then he'll do autographs and selfies with people. He always hosts the Sinister Visions costume contest, which for me is always the highlight of the weekend. And he is doing that on Saturday, but he'll be there on Friday. He can get there at 6:30. He'll do pro, you know, with professional photo ops.
Yeah.
And those have become so popular.
Yeah.
The photo ops. I mean, it's just so many of them. And they add props and costumes. They're really a lot of
fun.
There's
a bunch of props and costumes this year.
Yeah. So. They got a simulated Sven coffin.
That's what I heard. Yeah.
And you can, if you get your picture taken with Lance, they're going to have actually pieces of costumes that were from the movies,
right.
The alien movies that you can wear. And you're going to get a picture taken in front of a large alien egg.
My only picture that I care about is with Tony Todd in the Candyman costume, which I still don't know what it's supposed to be exactly. But
it's a hook and a coat.
It's like a pimp coat. And
Is he going to have bees all over his
face? I hope so.
Yeah, that's what I want.
But the costume contest, what I have gone to do, because I love that too.
And I love it.
I don't even look at the wall of people that are waiting to come up on stage. I wait until they get up on stage to look at the costumes because Rich's reactions are part of seeing the costume for the first time.
No question about
it. And I don't even I won't even allow myself to preview anything. I just want it to all be up on stage. And you and I just get right in the front and just watch it.
Laugh our asses off.
I
have to say that there's now a kid who's shown up with his dad.
Yeah.
2 years in a row, as far as I'm concerned, two of the greatest costumes I've ever seen. 1 year, the kid, and he's a little kid. He's four or five or something. One,
he's just a prop for his parents. But it's great.
He was Roddy Piper from They Live.
That's right.
And he had the mullet. He had the full mullet. He had the costume, full costume. And instead of a gun, he had a big bucket of double bubble bubble gum.
That's right.
Because he didn't want to run out of bubble gum because then he'd have to kick ass.
Yeah.
But last year was the capper, and I can't wait to see what he's going to be dressed as Saturday because I know his dad's going to bring him again, and he's going to put him into something that this kid has no idea who or what it is. But last year he was the thing with two heads. He had the thing around his neck and a styrofoam head that had Rosie Grier's face on it.
That's right.
And it was one of the greatest things, one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. So
the kid hasn't. Although I remember the Roddy Piper thing, he was even doing wrestling poses and stuff on stage. He's like, I don't know what I'm doing.
And his dad had a They Live alien mask on, so you kind of he was standing next to him, and he had because the kid had the sunglasses on.
Yeah.
So so great stuff. But anyway, that's part of the costume contest, which is Saturday afternoon, and you should check that out. That's 4:15, and it is again hosted by the great Sven Gulli. So and then Friday night, I'm going to moderate the stuff with Sven. And Steve's going to moderate the stuff with Robert Englund, and then that's followed by a 35th anniversary screening of Nightmare on Elm Street. All right, Steve, hang on for a second.
Yes.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we got more Flashback Weekend stuff to talk about. Again, get your tickets now. You can see a full schedule at flashbackweekend.com, flashbackweekend.com, starting Friday going through Sunday at the Crown Plaza Hotel O'Hare in Rosemont. And much more stuff to talk about coming up after this. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man. You get your requests in now. It's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Steve Procopius is with me, and we are previewing a Flashback Weekend. We have both been a part of it since the very beginning, 2002. Mike and Mia Kurz put together a great, great weekend. Flashbackweekend.com. Go there right now. Check out the full schedule, and you get your tickets. It's at the Crown Plaza O'Hare in Rosemont, Illinois. Here are some of the other things that are happening. Steve, welcome back.
Hello.
Robert Englund is reuniting with the ladies of Elm Street. You got Amanda Wiss, Lisa Wilcox. You've got... of course, Heather Langenkamp, and I'm very excited that Lisa Zane is going to be there this year.
Yeah,
Lisa and I kind of go way back, and we haven't seen each other in 24 or 25 years.
Back to this movie?
Back to when we used to do.
When I say this movie, I'm talking about Freddy's Dead.
No, not Freddy's Dead. Before that, actually, it was about a year before that. A year or so before that I met her. She had actually, you know what? She had just gotten it. So that's how long it's been. So it's 28 years because it was 1991 when that movie came out. But I knew her because first of all, she's from Chicago.
Okay.
Her parents used to come to the film events that I would host back in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
And in the 80s, and they were regular listeners to Roy's show. So they knew who I was. And, of course, Billy Zane is her brother.
Mm-hmm.
They came to town when we used to do the Chicago Film Critic Awards at the Pump Room.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In Ambassador East.
Right.
And we actually had an awards ceremony for years. Now we don't anymore.
I was there for the last couple.
Yeah. This one was they were in town, and they were presenting, they each were presenting an award.
Yeah.
And so they came back to town. Obviously they're from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And I met her, and we hung out for like a couple of days, and we had a great time. And she was like, I'm going to be in town for a few days. What should I do? And I told her to go see a play that John Cusack's company New Crime was putting up. Mm. They did a production of Accidental Death of an Anarchist by mm-hmm. Dario Fo. And I was like, you should go see that. And she and Billy saw it. They loved it. And so we ended up hanging out at the bar in the Ambassador East and stuff, and talking and hanging out. And I know her folks. And I'm just really excited. She's never been there before.
Nice.
Never been to Flashback before. But all those girls are going to be there, and you get a photo op with them. There's a Night of the Creeps reunion. I guess I didn't know just how popular that movie was.
Yeah.
But it's got a great following.
Yeah. Fred Decker, the director, is kind of like that. He's kind of came up as a writer, but then the couple of movies, Monster Squad and this one,
yeah,
have a really great, passionate following.
They do. Yeah. And so almost the entire cast is there, including the great Tom Atkins.
Allegedly the largest cast reunion ever.
It is, I think.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10
plus
cast
Fred,
members.
Plus
Kurtzman.
Robert Kurtzman, who did the makeup.
Who also did the makeup for Candyman.
Right.
And he'll be putting the makeup on Tony Todd when you get your picture taken with him.
That's right.
And Robert Englund, you can get a picture taken with him in the full-size boiler room. So, because, you know, that's where Freddy lives, mm-hmm. in the boiler room. So you got your Candyman reunion with Tony Todd and the great Virginia Madsen, who I'm very excited about because she's in Sideways.
I've interviewed her once. I don't remember. Oh, was she in a movie called The Astronaut Farmer by any chance with Billy Bob Thornton?
Was she in that? I don't remember.
I think that's the movie I interviewed the two of them.
Here's the thing. You know, when I've never met her before.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm very excited because she's cool. Been in a lot of stuff that I love.
She was just in her smell. Yeah.
Beautifully cast as Elizabeth Moss's mom. What a great piece of casting that is.
But just still got it, like, as an actor.
There's no question about it. That, she's great. I've loved her since Electric Dreams, mm-hmm. back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Melinda Clark is going to be there. Serena Vincent is going to be there. And then Lance Hendrickson, as we've mentioned before. But the big deal here this year is Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell. And there's a special Q&A that they're closing out on Sunday. It's Ted Raimi, Bruce Campbell, and Sam Raimi, and you have to have a special ticket for that one, and that's going to be really great. We're ending the entire weekend with these three guys on stage talking about Evil Dead and much, much more. Lance Hendrickson, if you guys want to see his Q&A, I'm going to be monitoring that one. I've done all of the Q&As every time that he comes to town, and he's great. He has great stories. He's very funny. And his Q&A will be Saturday at 2 p.m. And so for the Saturday Q&As are 1 o'clock Serena Vincent, 1:30 Robert Kurtzman, 2 o'clock Lance Hendrickson, 2:30 Melinda Clark, 3 o'clock Heather Landingkamp, and then those are the Q&As for Saturday. And then there will be more on Sunday.
Sunday gets busier in every year now.
I know. It used to be like...
and Friday does too, by the way.
Yeah, and it used to be like... Sunday was like, we don't have that much
responsibility. Friday was a day off.
Yeah.
It was just a day, it was like one screening and that was it. And now
on Saturday,
now we got to work.
On Sunday at 1:30, the Candyman Q&A, which Steve, you'll be doing.
If you like horror set in Chicago.
Yeah.
And you want to see the city... in a way it doesn't look right now. Yeah. Lots of big parts of it don't look that way anymore.
And then following that at 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon is the Q&A for Dream Master. And that will be done by Heather. At 2:30, Lisa Zane, who I just mentioned, and I'll be doing that Q&A. And then the big special event is Sam Raimi, Bruce Campbell, and Ted Raimi talking about all that cool stuff. There are also, I do want to say that throughout the weekend in some of the lower ballrooms downstairs, they're screening some really terrific movies.
Yeah.
A lot of really good movies are being screened if you want to check them out. Let me see where
I don't think there's anything on Friday,
right?
But Saturday, I mean, and they're all films that are relevant to the guests that are there, that,
right.
that they don't have. Like they're not playing in the big ballroom this time,
right?
So, like, the first day is Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness, Candyman, and Return of the Living Dead.
Three. Yeah, well, that's Melinda.
Right,
that's
which Melinda Clark is in.
And then on the big screen, we'll have Night of the Creeps. And then on the lower level on Sunday, they're going to show Dark Man and Drag Me to Hell.
Yeah. So, jeez, what a double bill.
It's amazing.
I'm going to skip my Q&A, actually.
Yeah, let's skip the Q&As and let's just go downstairs and watch that stuff. So, again, tickets are available. Get your schedule at flashbackweekend.com and come out and see all these great celebrities. Have a great time. And say hi to Steve and I. We'll be there. So, Steve, Please. Thank you so much for coming down.
Thanks. Man. I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll see you enough this weekend.
Yeah.
So we'll see each other all weekend long. All right, let's take a quick break here because the news is coming up right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Triple Play Thursday getting kicked off with some Queen right there. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. That's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. All right, who requested the Queen?
That's coming to us from Dave in Monroe.
Dave in Monroe requesting the Queen. All right. You know, Queen was played quite frequently on MTV. See, I'm segueing. See how I did that? I'm a professional broadcaster. MTV, August 1st, 1981. MTV began its maiden broadcast and has been going for 38 years, which is kind of crazy. But it has evolved and obviously changed and expanded. And become a much different broadcast network now than it was when it started in 1981. So we're going to be talking about MTV celebrating its anniversary. It was a cable channel that changed music, like absolutely changed the face of music. There's no question about it. The impact that MTV made on music in the 80s and in continuing into the 90s was huge, massive. And I don't know, a lot of people, I didn't have it in 1981. We didn't have cable in the city in 1981. So I think just a few of the kids I went to high school with who lived in the suburbs had it, and it was like a big deal. I got it in 1985, so it was like without MTV for 4 years of its existence. But we had Friday night videos. For those people who didn't have MTV, there were video shows on, you know, your broadcast network shows, the most popular of which was on NBC on Friday nights, and that was Friday Night Videos. So that's where we caught up on the stuff that was being played over and over and over again on the 24-hour MTV network. And then other videos, local video shows popped up in the early 80s until I got MTV in 1985. And I was the first one in my neighborhood to get it, and where all my friends, because they started in the south part of the city first and moved their way north. And I lived right off of Grand Avenue. I lived between Grand and North Avenue. And all of my other friends lived pretty much between Addison and Lawrence. So for a while, I was the only one who had MTV, and then it finally moved north in the city, you know, to Addison and Irving and Montrose, Lawrence, and those areas. But I was further south, obviously. I was a little just south of Grand.
Now, did your friends, like, did you have the thing where they would run over to your house? We got to go to Nick's house. He's got MTV.
Yeah, I mean, they couldn't run. They'd have to drive.
Right.
But that's where every single person I know watched Live Aid. Because it wasn't available. Live Aid was not available, or MTV was not available in those east westbound streets that go north, that are north, further north. It wasn't available, so everybody came over to my house and watched it, and we were there all day. Now, you know, the networks showed it, but not all of it. MTV showed all of Live Aid, all of it. They broadcast the whole thing, and my friends were. My friends were there for hours. We were just watching it. We ordered pizzas, and we just sat in front of the TV and watched Live Aid, the whole thing. We watched the whole thing. And it was all at my place because we were the only ones who had the cable. But MTV made a massive impact. And I remember being mad because we didn't have it. You know, because like this, we're talking about at a time when MTV started, that was like it was like the height of the popularity of the Police and all these great artists saying, I want my MTV, and I wanted my MTV. But we didn't have it. So like I said, there were a lot of local and syndicated video shows. And then, of course, like I said, Friday night videos on NBC. So for those of us who didn't have the cable then, that's, you know, fulfilled our needs. But if you want to jump in with your MTV memories, we're going to talk about I got the maiden broadcast and all that historic moment that happened on this date in 1981. We're going to talk about some of the original MTV shows, some of the original programming on MTV that were the best. And then we are also going to talk about the most iconic music videos of all time. All of them at some point were shown in heavy rotation on MTV, and some of them did change music. And the music video did do that. MTV changed music. It's historically very important. Whether you are pro MTV or anti MTV or you don't like videos, historically it made a massive impact in the world of music. So, because and I think it's like a timeline. There was music pre MTV. There was music before MTV, and then there was music after MTV. And that's basically true. So it was the year was 1981. It was on this date in 1981. If advertisers make the video disco channel a success, the implications for cable television and the recording industry could be far-reaching, wrote a New York Times business columnist in the summer of 1981. About the upcoming premiere of a new cable television network dedicated exclusively to popular music. This prediction proved to be an understatement of historic proportions, though not exactly overnight. Though the premiere of MTV on this day in 1981 would later be seen as the beginning of a whole new era in pop culture, only a few thousand Night Owl subscribers to a single northern New Jersey cable system were able to witness the televised revolution. Yeah, it was funny because you couldn't see it outside of northern New Jersey, and because the studios where they taped everything were in New York, but for the big party that they had, like it's our first, you know, we're launching the network, they couldn't even see it in New York.
Really?
Yeah, they had to go to New Jersey.
Oh.
And I can name the original VJs. I can name all five of the original VJs. And I had a massive crush on one of them, so did everybody. So there was J.J. Jackson. J.J. Jackson, man. He was an older African-American dude, kind of the uncle/father figure of the VJs. And all of these VJs, and that was another term that was coined by MTV, you know, DJ, disc jockey. This is a video jockey. So they became VJs. So the first VJ, J.J. Jackson, man, a veteran of FM radio. Yeah. Awesome dude. I love J.J. Love J.J. He had the radio voice. He was like your classic sort of, you know, dude who's been in the radio business doing the FM thing for a long time. Man, I'm J.J. Jackson. So you had J.J. Jackson. You had Alan Hunter, who was kind of the blonde, spiky-haired dude. Who was just kind of he was kind of cool, and he was laid back and he was funny. He was like the funny guy. Alan Hunter would crack like the jokes. He was kind of the goofy guy. He was kind of cute, you know. He had blondish hair, spiky. At Alan Hunter again, all five of the original VJs had radio background. They were taken from radio. No experience on camera, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think anybody had experience on camera. And then there was Mark Goodman. Mark Goodman he had black hair, he had a perm. He was like
you.
He was like a sort of a handsome, like he was like a, kind of the douchey guy. He also had kind of the radio voice. It's like, hey, it's Mark Goodman, everybody. And he was like, he thought he was hipper than the room, but he wasn't. You know, like he thought he was dropping knowledge on you whereas Alan Hunter was kind of the goofy guy who was self-deprecating. You know, I'm blanking on his name now. Mark Goodman was a douche. And then years later, after, you know, they kind of stopped doing VJs on MTV. They cut down the five original VJs eventually were gone, and they were replaced by other VJs over the years and things like that. Mark Goodman got morning drive on Q101 here.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh man.
And I always when I would watch Mark Goodman, I always thought he was kind of like a bit of a know-it-all kind of like curly-haired douche.
Uh-huh.
And then I met him and he was 10 times worse. He was worse than I had ever imagined.
It's like, wow, he really toned it down for TV.
He would end up going to critic screenings. See, I don't know, you know, because he was in the biz. Huh. So he would end up going to critic screenings, and I would, you know, like, I tried to talk to him. I'm like, dude, and he also thought, like, he was the coolest person in the world because he was, at one point, he was a VJ.
Yeah, it's weird to think that that was a thing, because I grew up with MTV going into the new millennium, which was its own...
Yeah,
strange thing, and it's just like,
and you had what's the douche who's on Last Call?
Oh, Carson Daly.
Yeah,
Total Request Live.
That was huge.
It was massive.
Yeah,
and I was not even a pop kid, really. I got switched off of MTV fairly early on by a babysitter who was just like, "Nah, you don't want to listen to this crap."
Yeah,
here's Zeppelin.
Yeah, well, that's a good babysitter.
Yeah, he was really mean though. About it, he was kind of like, "Yeah, this sucks."
Yeah,
he broke my copy of Pink's "Misunderstood" on CD.
Well, now that's unacceptable.
I know, right?
Because Pink rules.
Yeah, Pink was great.
I mean, I love Zeppelin. I also love Pink.
They're not mutually exclusive.
No, of course not.
But he was just like, "Nah, man. Here's Zeppelin and a copy of Lord of the Rings." And
oh,
he was just
God,
like, yeah.
I see where we're coming from.
Right,
I got you.
But you know, he turned me into that kind of kid, and so I rejected MTV. It was the enemy at that point.
So you had J.J. Jackson, man, and you had Alan Hunter, and then you had Mark Goodman, and then you had the two ladies. You had Nina Blackwood. Nina Blackwood was kind of the punky kind of, and this was the kind of the image that she had, was kind of the punky slutty one. And she'd be the first to tell you that. I've had Nina Blackwood on the show a few times. She's a fantastic guest, and she wrote a fantastic book about MTV, and was a part of it, but she was sort of like the ooh, I like her. She might be easy, do you know what I mean? And she had the raspy Demi Moore voice.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of, my future ex wife, kind of the Dana DiLorenzo voice. She's got that.
You have a type,
and so there's that. But the one that I had the crush on was Martha Quinn. I loved Martha Quinn. Martha Quinn was the sort of, you know, the pixie dream girl?
Manic pixie dream girl.
That's who she was.
Yeah.
One of the original of that, you know, she was the 80s manic pixie girl.
Yeah. I'm looking at this photo of her and David Lee Roth from back in the day, and she's got like, she's wearing like a shirt and tie, nice short haircut.
Adorable. So those were and they tried to cover all types. So they did. And, you know, so these five DJs, and they all had different shifts. I think Martha Quinn had prime time. Alan Hunter was, I think the morning dude was JJ. I think JJ Jackson was in. Hey, how's it going, everybody? It's JJ Jackson, man. And then they would switch shifts every once in a while. But those were the original VJs. Those were the people right there. They were the ones who would, do your thing, and then they would report news. And then soon after that, Kurt Loder from Rolling Stone showed up, Rolling Stone magazine, and he became like the news guy. So like Kurt Loder would do the MTV news, and they would cover not just entertainment and movies, but they would do like some political stuff, serious stuff. And as the years went by, they would get more correspondence. And I have to say this. I got to say, I think MTV had a huge effect on the 1992 election of Bill Clinton. Huge. you know, they would host forums. They would have, people, talking about the politics on MTV. Oh, man, I can't remember. Allison, lovely woman, African-American woman who would host. She was kind of like a political.
Allison Stewart.
Yeah, Allison Stewart. She was awesome. She would host like the town hall meetings where they would have like candidates show up. But yeah, I think it was instrumental in what happened in 1992. I think MTV had a huge effect on it.
I mean, even learning all of it secondhand, MTV News was responsible for some pretty huge moments in pop culture. For me, really, the footage of Kurt Loder revealing the death of Kurt Cobain.
Oh, yeah.
That's like, when people talk about the death of Kurt Cobain, they don't show the newscast from, you know, right, any of the major networks. It's Kurt Loder saying it because he was the symbol of Kurt. Cobain was a symbol of Gen X, and yeah, so was MTV.
Yeah. So, but yeah, the impact was pretty massive in a lot of ways. Yeah. Allison Stewart. I've had her on the show, too. JJ passed away, unfortunately, some years ago. I loved him, though, man. I love JJ. Yeah, JJ Jackson, man. There's JJ Jackson. JJ, do you know who JJ Jackson loved?
Who?
Michael Hutchins.
From NXS?
Loved him.
That's great.
Loved him. He would show an NXS video, and he'd come up to me, man, Michael Hutchins, man. Let me tell you something. I'm J.J. Jackson. He reminds me of Mick Jagger. He's like an 80s Mick Jagger. But J.J., there's still an 80s. There was an 80s Mick Jagger. Now there's a 2010. Now there's a 2019 Mick Jagger. So, all right, we're talking MTV. It debuted on this date in 1981, changed the face of music, and as itself, as a channel, evolved and changed completely from what it started out as. If you guys want to jump in with your MTV memories, we're also going to talk about some of the original MTV shows and some of the most iconic videos of all time. And if you guys remember the original VJs, yeah, man. Martha Quinn. Oh, loved her. 312-981-7200 here on WGN. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. It is Triple Play Thursday, so we're hearing some Queen. We'll hear one more. It's one artist, three songs. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200. That's coming up. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Today marks the 35th anniversary of the maiden broadcast of MTV. MTV makes its maiden broadcast on this date in 1981, and we're talking about MTV. We want to hear from you guys. What are your MTV memories? And do you remember the original five VJs and some of the videos? And if you had some of your original MTV shows, we're going to get to as well. 847 says, and Kurt Loder, too. Kurt Loder was not one of the first five VJs. Kurt Loder did not jump in until the mid-80s. He was about four years into the run of MTV. That's when Kurt Loder joined. Caribbean Bob says, I first saw MTV in 1981 at Western Illinois University at the DU frat. The first video I saw was The Fix with Stand or Fall. I remember it well. Yeah, The Fix. I love that band. Fix, one of my favorite 80s bands. Like, truly one of my favorite 80s bands of all time. Stand or Fall is a jam. Yeah, I remember that video, too. But again, we didn't have access to it 24 hours a day. We had to wait for a couple of years. Kurt says, I'm 57. I was in college at Macomb in 1981. At the time, there was not stereo televisions. The cable system would simulcast the audio on an FM frequency at the time so we could play the audio on a stereo. I even bought a stereo TV receiver to watch Miami Vice in stereo. Oh, there you go. There's some mid-80s for you, Miami Vice. You know what? How Michael Mann pitched Miami Vice to NBC?
No.
MTV Cops. That's how he pitched it.
There it is.
And thus it was born. And that's exactly what it was, because they would have like tons of like 80s, popular 80s and sort of really cool 80s songs that would be on the soundtrack. Which explains why it took forever for Miami Vice to come out on DVD, for the series to come out on DVD, because they had to go through 9 million, you know, channels and avenues to get the rights to so many songs. So here's Tim on WGN. Hi, Tim.
Hey, yeah, I just wanted to say I was out in Colorado for like 6 months, and it was this thing called MTV. Nobody has ever heard of it. And I came back to Chicago. Nobody heard of it. So we've been watching that all the time out in Colorado, out west.
Yeah,
and then it drifted out this way.
Yeah, it took a while. It took a while to get to get here. That's for sure.
It's just crazy. You are nailing everything that I've seen back in the past. Everything is just, you're nailing it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it changed music. It really did. It was very impactful. It may have taken a few years, but it did change music. All right, Tim. Thank you.
The same time I was out there, and U2 was in Morris there holding up signs. Hey, tickets, tickets. I was like, who's U2? I didn't even know that, but now we know who U2 is.
Yep, I don't know anybody
awesome.
Who does.
You got an awesome show.
Thank
brother.
You, buddy.
I love
Take care,
late
Matt.
Night radio.
Thanks, buddy. All right, there you go. There's Tim, everybody. It was just after midnight in the early morning hours of August 1st, 1981, that the fledgling music television network flickered to life. Ladies and gentlemen, rock and roll were the words that preceded an opening montage featuring a chunky guitar riff playing over the familiar image of an American astronaut placing an unfamiliar flag on the surface of the moon, a flag emblazoned with a big capital M and smaller handwritten letters of TV, which became, of course, the iconic image associated with them. The very first video that was shown on MTV was by a band that had no other hit and would have never seen the light of day had they not been the very first video, by a band called The Buggles, a new wave duo, and it was Video Killed the Radio Star. That was the very first video shown on MTV, followed by Pat Benatar's You Better Run. From a rotation, there were several songs that were considered classic of that era, including Love Stinks by Jay Giles, Can't Happen Here by Rainbow, Rapture by Blondie. They only had 80 different videos that made up the first week's rotation on MTV. So they would change, they would just play them over and over, because at that time, videos were not as popular.
Right.
They were promotional tools. They were little promotional tools that some labels were doing and some bands were doing. So, you know, there were lots of repeats when MTV was in its infancy. You know, you would see the same video like three times every hour and a half or something. But yeah. But then it launched and it became massive. So, all right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We'll take a quick break. The news is coming up after this. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How you doing? We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And it is Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. That wraps up our first Triple Play of the morning, and that was Queen. So one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Also, that's the phone number that you can talk to or text to us, 312-981-7200. And we are talking about MTV. Today marks the maiden performance and broadcast of MTV. MTV started on August 1st, 1981, and it has continued for 38 years. It has changed a lot. It has evolved, but it has also influenced music in incredible and immeasurable ways. And has become, you know, a part of pop culture, changed pop culture. Back in the early days, we were talking about it when it debuted, you know, there were only 80 videos in the rotation for the first week that they began broadcasting in 1981. And the very first video ever shown was Video Killed the Radio Star by The Buggles. And then it went on to become massive in the 80s and into the 90s. And then the original programming started. And it became more of what that was about, That was about more than it was that it became, you know, the MTV thing. The music part of MTV kind of fell to the wayside, as you can tell right now if you watch the stuff that's on MTV. But we've got the best original MTV shows of all time. We're going to talk about that coming up right here. And we also have the most iconic music videos of all time. And we want to hear your memories, and we'll read some of your texts right now. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 804 area code says, my favorite story videos were Michael Jackson's Thriller and David Bowie's Blue Jean. I liked all the VJs. They were unique in their own ways. Yeah, they did. They hired five people that were absolutely, you know, they wanted to get specific types represented. And they did. They did a good job with that. Thriller, obviously the impact that Thriller, you know, made. It was epic. And that was one that, you know, we didn't have cable in the city when Thriller debuted. We didn't get cable until early 1985. We didn't get cable until, I think it was like February of 85 when I got it. Now, my friends didn't get it till I think the end of 85. So we had to wait for Friday Night Videos to show it on NBC. But the thing was that, like, MTV had these deals where you could not show a video that MTV debuted for 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks after it debuted. There had to be a certain amount of times that MTV would air it before it could go to syndication or networks. And so we didn't see Thriller on Friday Night Videos until probably 3 weeks or a month after it debuted on MTV.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Just not. Did you feel? Were you like annoyed or upset? Like, I know this cultural thing is out there, but
yeah,
I guess,
well,
your friends weren't around, weren't talking about
here's
it
the
necessarily.
Thing. I was not really annoyed specifically by that, by Thriller, because I don't like Michael Jackson. I like the Jackson 5, and I like Off the Wall. Few songs on Thriller I like. Anything after that I think is trash. I don't like anything after Thriller. Bad, whatever the hell the other ones were, you know.
Yeah,
I just don't. I don't think I. You know, I just don't. I never liked him. I never thought he was that great. Incredible dancer, incredible performer, no question about it. And a few songs on Thriller. I like Human Nature. On
Do you
Thriller.
Like Beat It?
Yeah, I like Beat It. I think Beat It's good. Billie Jean is okay. Yeah. Oh, PYT. I love PYT. I do love PYT. But I think Off the Wall is a better album. I think Off the Wall is a much better album than Thriller. But then after Thriller, nothing, man. Seriously, nothing.
Not a fan.
I like the way you make me feel. No,
you don't. You don't mess
Smooth
around.
Criminal. I like the Alien Ant Farm version of Smooth Criminal.
I mean, that's a pretty good cover, but
yeah, no, Black or White, no. Anything off of Bad? No. It's just, I don't. I like Fat by Weird Al, who, by the way, I understand tore it up at Ravinia the other night. Yeah. So, but I was not upset about Thriller. I don't know. I saw it. I watched it. I was like, oh, that's fine. 630 area code says, hey, talk about Netflix and chill. Ha, I lost my virginity watching MTV in 1982. So it was back in the early 80s, instead of Netflix and chill, it was MTV and chill? I wasn't aware that that was a thing. Here's Ike on WGN. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick, how's it going with you, man?
All right.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I was more of a VH1 watcher, but my memory of MTV when I was a kid, the music video I remember the most was Mars' Pump Up the Volume.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, what was interesting about it, it was very unique with its style, how bizarre it was, mixing hip-hop with dance. I really liked it.
Yeah.
That was very cool.
That was popular. That was a very, very popular video. Absolutely. All right, Ike, thanks, man.
No problem.
Yeah, and by the way, and VH1 was an offshoot of MTV.
Yeah, what was the deal with that?
It was Video Hits 1. That's what VH1 stands for.
Oh.
Video Hits 1, and it was originally the concept of VH1, of Video Hits 1, was kind of yacht rockish. It was kind of the softer, you know, the softer music, because MTV was like, you know, dance, and then they were getting into, you know, they were hair metal, and all that stuff. There was a period of time where MTV was like really loud for a long period of time, and really fast cuts, bright lights, loud music. And so VH1 was like the alternative. It was like, okay, if you want to chill out a little bit, here's Video Hits 1.
And then it turned into Flavor of Love.
Yeah. And it turned into Flavor of Love. And
I always did appreciate the I Love the series, you know. I Love the 80s.
Oh, I love
amazing
them.
Show.
I loved all of them. I loved all of them. Love them all.
Some of the appearances, some of the talking heads were,
they were
so
great.
Funny.
Well, I mean, you know, and I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. I mean, I talk a lot about that. Well, I'm talking about it now.
Yeah, we're doing it right
I'm
now.
I'm doing it right now. Yeah. I love, like, nostalgic topics that you can go back and share memories with tons of people, you know. Yeah. Hey, you remember the Rubik's Cube? I like that stuff. I think that's fun.
Well, and for me as a millennial, that was my introduction to a lot of cultural history.
Yeah.
Was watching that and being like, okay, so this is what Cabbage Patch Kids were all about.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and I was watching it going, I lived all of this.
Some things you kind of wish you forget.
I think the first one they did was I Love the 70s. That was the first one they did. And I adored that because I grew up in the 70s for the most part. I mean, my teenage years were in the were late 70s into the 80s.
Right.
But I mean, as a kid, I grew up in the 70s. So,
and then they did I Love the 2000s, and that was just kind of miserable because I felt like there was just nothing specific about it.
Yeah.
But maybe it was because I had already lived it, and it was too close to the 2000s being over. Like, they started airing that in like 2010. Yeah. I was like, oh, wow, let's give us some distance here.
But yeah, no, I loved all that stuff. But yeah, but that's what VH1 was. Video. Here's, oh, fun little, you want a fun little tidbit here?
Hit me.
Fun little fact. Next time you're at a party and you want to impress everybody. VH1 was the very first network to keep its logo in the bottom right corner.
Really?
Very first network to do that was VH1. And now every network does it.
Oh, of course.
And even, you know, regular networks do it now, not just cable.
Yeah, this ABC, NBC.
Everybody has their little logo in the corner.
Yeah. VH1 was the first one to do
that. VH1 was the first one to do that.
Can't wait to whip that one out at a party.
Stayed there all the, now that's going to end up on the show in a couple of weeks. You can't wait to whip that out one at the party?
Damn it.
But yeah, that's the first one. Video Hits 1. And just so you know, this is what channel you're watching. And I remember like people getting really annoyed by that. Like, why is the VH1 logo on the screen 24 hours a day? What? You know, and now it's not just a logo, but everything is promoed.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, they take up the whole bottom part of the screen. They did a bit on SNL where it was a cable news network, and they kept putting more graphics up until you couldn't see the person, you couldn't see the anchor. You just saw, like, the person's eye, and it was all these different anchors and tickers and stuff. Here's William on WGN. Hi, William.
Hi. I'm going to give you the name of three videos. My vote for the best story video would be Fine Day for a Reunion by Tony Carey. And there's two videos that they dropped. We'll not see on MTV anymore. They dropped them decades ago. That was Fine Day and 38 Special. And there's a reason for that. And third, they blacklisted 1984. You hardly ever see that. And it's obvious why they blacklisted that, since it, you know, the lines of that song.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They used to play, where they used to play songs on MTV. But the reason they don't show 38 Special with, just lost the name, which I just gave to you. If I'd Been the One and Tony Carey Fine Day, the reason they don't show those anymore is, do you know the answer?
I do not know the answer, William.
Firearms. Fine Day shoots somebody with an M16. The other one, the woman has a 38 special, shooting her lover, I guess, or unfaithful husband, implied. But
okay.
You will not see those on MTV.
Well, you won't see any videos on MTV now, William. They don't show videos anymore on MTV.
But those two, though, were like my favorite. I mean, awesome videos, and they won't show them.
Well, okay. So. All right, William. Take care, man. But don't feel alone, William, because no, everybody's going to miss videos because they don't show videos on MTV anymore. They don't. The VMAs are coming up, by the way.
That seems a little ironic.
Well, it's just, you know, they continue having the Video Music Awards every year, and I think there's a small time during the broadcast day when they show videos, but it's like maybe 2 hours or 3 hours a day at the most are dedicated to showing videos. So I don't know, you know, I mean, I can't remember the last time I saw a music video like on TV. I know they get shown on certain places, but it's not the channel it used to be. So August 1st, 1981, that's when it started. 312-981-7200, we're talking MTV. And we're going to get into the MTV original programming, the MTV shows. Yeah.
Hey, get a rhythm. When you get the blues, come on, get a rhythm. When you get the blues, get a rock and roll feeling in your bones, put taps on your toes and get gone, get a rhythm.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Who requested that?
John. John wanted to hear a little Johnny Cash.
Got it. All right. Hey, welcome back. Today marks the anniversary of the maiden broadcast of MTV, which was a much different channel back in 1981 when it first broadcast, and we are talking about that. We're going to get to some original MTV shows that we loved and some of the most iconic music videos of all time, celebrating the 38th anniversary of MTV. Here we go. 516 area code says, hey, bro. Hey, bro.
That's how I greet you every day, right?
Yeah, that's right, bro. Hey, bro. How about that syndicated show, MV3? Used to be on the UHF channel in Chicago. Yeah, that was a new wave show. There was also another one, MV50. It was on in Chicago. And then that's what I was talking about. I was talking about that we had to watch those and NBC's Friday Night Videos. That's the only places, these weirdly syndicated shows that were kind of very new wavy. And then, you know, the syndicated shows and Friday Night Videos. JB says, the first video I saw on MTV was You Better Run by Pat Benatar. Oh, my God. She was the sexiest woman I had ever seen, and I was hooked. Pat Benatar rules, man. She made some great videos, too. Mm-hmm. Some really great videos. 847 area code says, Metal Hour rocked. You mean Headbangers Ball.
One of the best shows I've
Headbangers
ever seen.
Ball was fantastic on MTV. Adam Curry was one of the hosts. That guy had the most ridiculous hair. And then you had, Matt Pinfield was the host. It was 90 minutes long, and it was all alternative music. And I can't remember what it was called. It was on Sunday nights. If Esmeralda is listening right now, she's screaming into the radio. But it was called it was alternative, and it was it was 90 minutes long, and it was on Sunday nights. Matt Pinfield was the host.
120 minutes.
120. Oh, there you go. And it wasn't 90 minutes long. It was 120 minutes. Long.
Yeah.
And that was dedicated to like cutting edge alternative stuff.
Yeah, ran for about 4 years.
Yeah. And then 815 area code says, didn't Amy Sedaris have a comedy on MTV? I forgot her character's name. She was dorky, unpopular, and bucktooth, yet still strangely hot. No, Strangers with Candy.
That was on Comedy Central, right?
Yeah, that was on Comedy Central. Wasn't on MTV.
Great show, though.
Fantastic.
Very early Stephen Colbert.
Yes. Did you see the movie?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Fantastic. Amy Sedaris is a national treasure, as far as I'm concerned. That craft cooking homemaking show satire mm-hmm. that she has is brilliant. At Home with Amy Sedaris,
yeah,
brilliant.
And of course, Princess, she's on BoJack. She's Princess.
Well, yeah. I can't remember her name on it, but she's on BoJack too. But she's unbelievable. And I love her brother. I love David.
Oh yeah,
incredible writer.
Kind of like all of his books.
Yeah, incredible writer. And he's written so many stories about how crazy his family is, especially Amy. I love them when they end up on shows together.
Mm-hmm.
They're fantastic. They're just fantastic. But no, yeah, Strangers with Candy is a great show. It wasn't on MTV, but it was on Comedy Central. Maybe they repeated it on MTV because, you know,
when they're all Viacom. So.
Because MTV, you know, repeats a lot of stuff that was on different channels.
Yeah.
I mean, like, for instance, My So-Called Life got a second life because of MTV. After ABC canceled it, I think it was like maybe a little bit less than a year later, they started showing it on MTV, and the teenagers who were watching MTV were like, hey, this show's awesome. And then they were pissed that it didn't have an ending. Here's Jill on WGN. Hi, Jill.
Hi. I just remember, you know, we weren't allowed to have cable. My dad was like, oh, I don't want any holes in my walls. And so we had to settle for the poor man's MTV, which was U66.
Oh, yeah.
It was Channel 66, and they always had, like, the B-rated videos, meaning,
right.
Like, they had artists you never heard of, or it was somebody's, like, after they were a one-hit wonder, it was their follow-up song that was a dud. But it was fun, because you got to see weird artists but different artists that you wouldn't normally... see.
Yeah, well, that was the only
on Friday night video.
Yeah, because we didn't get, you know, because we didn't get cable, we had to settle for all these weird syndicated channels and syndicated shows. And that's, you know, everybody who didn't have cable and didn't have MTV, you know, were starving for it by the time it came to into my neighborhood early in 1985. So,
mm-hmm.
All right, Jill, thank you.
Okay.
I want to talk about the original MTV shows. What are the best ones? And we also are going to talk about iconic music videos of all time. We're going to jump into that as well. But let's do the original MTV shows. MTV is a cable and satellite television channel that was originally called Music Television. It was launched in 1981. It predominantly aired music videos that were presented by television personalities that were known as video jockeys. At first, their target demographic was young adults interested in music. However, the network decided to move away from continuous music programs. Although they retained some music-based series, they now offer a wide range of television genres, including sitcoms, animation, reality series, game shows, documentaries, and dating programs. While some criticize this move away from music, others have become huge fans of the variety of shows that have aired on MTV. MTV now has many original shows that became a huge hit with viewers. And here are some of the best original MTV television series of all time. All right, what are your favorites? There are a lot of them. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. The first one here is Remote Control. Loved Remote Control.
Was that the one with the parents?
No.
No,
it was a game show. Remote Control was hosted by Ken Ober, and it would have three people sitting in Lazy Boys, and they would answer questions mostly about pop culture and TV. And, it was a popular TV game show that ran from 1987 to 1990. The show involved three contestants answering trivia questions on the topic of television, movies, and music. Some of the questions were presented in a skit format. The series was developed by Mike Dugan and Joe Davola. Joe Davola? Crazy Joe Davola? That's a character from Seinfeld. Crazy Joe Davola. Maybe Larry David knew the actual Joe Davola and named the character after him.
That'd be dope.
It was the first non-musical show shown on MTV. Ken Ober hosted it. Colin Quinn was his sidekick. People had walk-on parts included Adam Sandler, Roger Kabler, and, of course, Dennis Leary. So that was the show where we were introduced to Colin Quinn, Adam Sandler, and Dennis Leary. And other characters, other comedians actually showed up on that show, too. That's where they got their start. So, you know, you can thank Remote Control and MTV. That was first time anybody saw Colin Quinn, first time anybody saw Adam Sandler, first time anybody saw Dennis Leary was on Remote Control. And the girl sidekick was Marisol. I think she was the first one. And then Kari Wuhr. So we can thank MTV and Remote Control for Kari Wuhr. She was like the female sidekick. So Remote Control. All right, what are your favorite MTV original programs? 312-981-7200. News is up after this.
one morning with time to kill, I borrowed Jeb's rifle and sat on the hill. I saw a lone rider crossing the plain. I drew a bead on him to practice my aim. My brother's rifle went off in my hand.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here until 5 a.m. It is a Thursday morning, and it's Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday! Mm-hmm. And remember, I'm going to be off tomorrow morning, Friday morning, and off on Monday morning. It's the big, crazy flashback weekend horror convention, of which I am a host and moderator, and it's going to be great. Robert Englund, Freddy Krueger, and all of the ladies from the movies are going to be there, from the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. There's going to be incredible screenings. There's going to be a Night of the Creeps reunion. The Candyman with Tony Todd and Virginia Madsen is going to be there. And Lance Hendrickson is going to be there. Sven Gulli is going to be there, and I'm going to be hosting a great salute to Rich. It's going to be him and me on stage, talking about the 40 years that he has spent playing Sven Gulli, and that's going to happen Friday night at 7 o'clock in the big ballroom. There's going to be video. It's going to be me and Rich talking and taking questions and all kinds of great stuff. And that's at 7 o'clock in the ballroom at the Crown Plaza Hotel, where all of this takes place. You can get your picture taken with Rich for professional photo op at 6:30 on Friday, and then stick around and watch 40 years of Sven Gulli, which I will be moderating. That's one of many, many, many things that's happening at Flashback Weekend. And the big crazy guests include Bruce Campbell, the great Sam Raimi, Ted Raimi, and many, many more. Great activities, costume contests, all kinds of really cool things. There's going to be a post-party at the old Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant, which is a terrific restaurant located in the hotel. You can eat there all weekend. It's going to be open and having a really good time with all of the guests. So flashbackweekend.com, that's the website where you can order your tickets. You can make reservations. You can also check out the entire schedule, all of the events, all of the photo ops, all of the really cool things that are happening, and all of the great celebrity guests. Again, flashbackweekend.com, flashbackweekend.com. That's where I'm going to be all weekend. Okay. So we're talking MTV. On this date in 1981, MTV started. They only had 8 videos in their closet, and they just kept playing them over and over and over and over again. It evolved into something else. It had a major impact on music and a major impact on pop culture in general, and it's still there. The programming is a lot different now. It's mostly all original programming and not music videos anymore. So right now we're talking about the best original MTV shows of all time. We just talked about Remote Control, which was a classic show. And then there's Awkward. Awkward is a teen comedy series created for MTV by Lauren Lungrich. Jen Hamilton plays Ashley Rickards. She's the central character in the series. She is a Californian teenager who is struggling with her identity and is involved in an accident which is mistaken for a suicide attempt. It premiered on July 19, 2011, and was renewed for a second series on August 24th of the same year. After 3 seasons, the show's creator left the series, and it went on for another 2 seasons, and it aired on a final time in May of 2016. It is believed the cast members would be happy to return if there was a 6th season of the show. That's one I never watched.
It was pretty good.
Was it?
As far as, you know, MTV shows went, it was not bad.
Robin Big. Yes. Robin Big. Rob Dyrdek, who I love Rob Dyrdek. I think he's great. I love Fantasy Factory. I thought Fantasy Factory was a blast. And I love Ridiculousness, which during the weekends, that's all they show on MTV.
Pretty much, yeah.
I'm not kidding.
Really? It's just Ridiculousness?
It's like 48 hours of Ridiculousness. Yeah, and I'll turn it on. If there's nothing on, I'll be like, well, okay. It premiered on November 4th, 2006. Robin Big is a reality TV series following the lives of Rob Dyrdek and his best friend, Christopher Big Black Boykin. Dyrdek is a professional skateboarder, actor, and producer. Well, I don't know about actor.
Yeah, that's a bit of a stretch.
He was in a couple of skateboard movies, so there's not a lot of acting there. While Boykin is his bodyguard, the show ran for just three seasons and concluded on April 15, 2008. However, there are still reruns of the show on MTV2, which is the sister network of MTV. The show focuses on events in Dyrdek's life, such as when he had his home exercised and when he tried to break the Guinness World Book of Guinness World Record. Rob Dyrdek followed up with a series called Rob Dyrdek's Fantasy Factory, which ran from 2009 to 2014. And Ridiculousness, which is still on, which is hugely popular. Ridiculousness is just, it's a clip show. It's like mm-hmm. like an extreme version of America's Funniest Home Videos. It's like the viral videos where people are falling down the stairs or busting their head open or doing crazy things like vomiting and crazy animal videos. Dyrdek's the host. And like the sidekicks on the show are Stilo Brim, Sterling Stilo Brim, who kind of runs the videos from where he's sitting, and Chanel West Coast, who is she's a rapper and goof. And for some reason, my dad loves Chanel West Coast. He loves her. He absolutely loves Chanel West Coast. And because he's like, she's always happy. She's always laughing. And she's got, you know, like, she's on that show because of her laugh. But my dad loves her. My dad thinks Ridiculousness is hilarious. And my dad is going to be 78 in September. He is not the target audience for Ridiculousness. And yet my dad could sit and watch it for hours. He loves it. And his favorite part of the show is Chanel West Coast. So, True Life, another original MTV TV show. True Life is one of MTV's documentary series that revolves around serious topical issues. For example, the first episode, which aired March 31st, 1998, was titled Fatal Dose and was about heroin addiction. Subjects are followed by camera crews in areas of their lives that can relate to the topic of that episode. The show aired 328 episodes over 18 seasons, during which it had it covered over 140 topics. The series has been nominated for multiple awards, including winning a 2009 Emmy Award for Best Special Class Series, and the show is still ongoing on MTV. So there's True Life. We're reminiscing about MTV on this, the 38th anniversary of its maiden broadcast. 312-981-7200. You want to jump in? We will get to the most iconic music videos of all time. And we've got people who are texting in if you want to call in with your MTV stuff. 630 area code says, loved Remote Control and The Young Ones. Well, The Young Ones, MTV picked up The Young Ones. That's not an MTV production, The Young Ones. It's brilliant. It's hilarious. But that was not an MTV. That was when they were showing, they were doing some, they did a block of British shows on MTV. I'm trying to remember what the other did. I think they did two other British comedies right around the same time they were doing Young Ones. And like some other shows that MTV picked up from other networks and other production houses and other countries in this case, it exposed it to a lot of people who would never have seen it. Like it My So-Called Life, which got canceled after one season, but then picked up steam when it was shown on MTV. And the same thing happened with The Young Ones. 630 says, and of course, Live Aid. Live Aid was huge. 773 area code says, The Real World with the eventual Chicago edition. I loved The Real World. I loved it up until I stopped watching it after Vegas. After the Vegas season, I just stopped watching it because it became what 90% of the crap on TV now is. It's like 20-somethings trying to screw each other. The Vegas, that was where I stopped watching it. The first few seasons were terrific. I thought the first season was great. I loved San Francisco with Puck.
Yeah, was Puck the one he had? Did he have AIDS?
No. Pedro had it.
Pedro.
Puck was the jerk on the bike. Puck was the bike messenger who was a.
Oh yeah, okay.
Brown hair, scabs all over his legs.
No, Puck was terrible.
Oh, I loved him.
I didn't like him.
Seattle was great. Seattle was a great season. That was the season because one of the girls went nuts, but you found out that she had why am I blanking on it? Lyme disease. She had Lyme disease. I don't know if there were ticks in the building or what.
So she was just going nuts. Is that what Lyme disease does? It just drives you insane?
I'm not really sure, but that was her excuse. That was what they said it was. And that was also the one where when she got kicked out of the house, when she left the house, there was a dude who lived in the house, African-American guy who lived in that. I can't remember his name. Mike, maybe? Who took her favorite like stuffed animal. They lived right on the water at a pier.
Mm-hmm.
And he threw it over. And then like she was laughing because she was, you know, acting like she was nuts. And then he, as she was leaving, he opened up the door of the car and slapped her across the face.
Ooh.
And so they brought in an anger management guy, and they had the rest of the cast who was living with this guy watch the footage to see if they wanted him booted. To see if they wanted anything done, would they accept this kind of behavior? Yeah,
it's the real world.
And then the Chicago edition was really interesting because it was the first time that the people who were living in this place together were allowed to watch TV because it was being filmed when 9/11 happened.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like, "Well, we have to be able to show them this." And so part of the episodes were about them watching this on TV and seeing what was happening in New York and at the Pentagon and in Pennsylvania. And so that added a layer to it. My ex, Heather, was living in, when I first started dating her, she was living in Wicker Park. That's where it took place. It was in Wicker Park. And by the way, Vic was living in Wicker Park when they taped The Real World in Chicago.
Oh, no way.
He was living in the Flatiron building. So he was right in the center of everything.
Of course.
And so he was there when they were filming that whole season. My ex, when I first started dating her, she lived at like north, just east of Western. She lived off of North Avenue, just east of Western. So she was like right there.
Right there.
So
they were in Chicago not that long ago doing casting. For a recent season.
For another Real World? I know they came back a second time in Chicago.
Yeah. They were here casting, and I begged my brother to go.
I haven't watched it because it's just the show has evolved into just people sleeping with each other. And
it's wild.
I loved when they went back to New York and The Miz was on. That was before he became The Miz. But he was doing the character on the show. That was a great one, too. But the Chicago one was really funny because Heather was telling me, my ex Heather, was telling me that there were a ton of people in that neighborhood that didn't want them there, including her. And so a lot of people in the neighborhood would go out of their way to ruin shots. Like, while there were cameras, they would go in the background and, like, do terrible things and, like, throw stuff and say, get out of town. You know, they would, like, chant things. So they had to really edit around all of that. It was the most difficult season that MTV had to film. And I know a lot of people in Chicago take pride in that.
Yeah, leave it to Chicago.
Yeah, leave it to Chicago to almost ruin an entire season of The Real World. So, but for a while, I loved The Real World. I was addicted to it. I watched it all the way up, but then I watched the entire Vegas season, then I stopped. After that, I haven't seen it since. I went back, I watched a little bit of The Return to Chicago, but I really didn't like the characters, and it had that whole Vegas, let's sleep with each other vibe, and I was like, I don't care about that anymore. May as well watch Love Island. Did you watch Big Brother last night?
I haven't caught up with it. I was going to catch up with it a little bit later.
Okay. They're still idiots.
I mean, you refer to them as a house of something specific that we can't say, and can't it say makes it me laugh there was every
that,
time.
There was that TV show. We can throw it out here. I call it the House Full Of, and there was this TV show that was on CBS called JAG. And then they're the opposite of on. So put those two words together, and it's House Full Of that.
Impeccable. Impeccable cut around. Edit right around.
Yeah. I guess you could describe a lot of seasons of Big Brother as that, but this one, especially this one.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Thursday, that means Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday! One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. That ends the Triple Play of Johnny Cash. So we'll get some other ones coming up here for Triple Play Thursday, 312-981-7200. That's also the number to call or text to remember MTV. Today marks the 38th anniversary of MTV. It started broadcasting on August 1st, 1981. So we're remembering the VJs and the videos, and right now we're talking about the original MTV TV shows, and we'll get to the iconic music videos of all time as well. We got a bunch of texts coming in, so let's get to some of the more of those. 630 area code says, the show Next on MTV always made me laugh, but my favorite was Remote Control by far. I think a young Adam Sandler was in an episode, too. He was in several episodes. We were just talking about it. He was a regular. Adam Sandler, Dennis Leary, Colin Quinn all got their starts on that show. That's Chris in Elk Grove. Without a doubt, Deathmatch 2000. Do you mean Celebrity Deathmatch?
I think they mean Celebrity Deathmatch.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's Celebrity Death. It's not Deathmatch 2000. It's Celebrity Deathmatch, which was like a claymation animated series where two celebrities would get into a ring and they would kill each other. It was very entertaining.
It was absurd. I loved it, but it was absurd.
Mark the Breadman says there's a meme going around that says "Happy 38th anniversary to MTV celebrating 15 years of videos." 815 area code says, was Max Headroom on MTV? Max Headroom started out in Britain. It was a British show. It was a Channel 4 show. And he was a VJ. For those people who don't know, Max Headroom was this character played by Matt Frewer, who was like this robot kind of guy, who was like computer generated. And he had glitches. He would talk like this, and he had sunglasses on, like, and he looked like kind of a robot, with like metal or plastic hair, had a very weird background, and he would introduce videos and be funny, and then have glitches. But it did end up on MTV. Like I said, a lot of British shows or other things were shown on MTV, and he did become very popular in America, with a lot of commercial endorsements and stuff.
Became very popular in Chicago, too.
Because of the signal interruption. Some dude in a Max Headroom mask cut in on, I believe it was Channel 9 and Channel 11.
Yeah, WTTW.
Yeah. And he was in for a while, too. He busted into the signal for a while. Very crazy, very weird. But Max Headroom was also, it spun it off into an American TV series. It was actually produced in Britain. But it was an ABC network series, and it was a great show that was only on for one season. And it was a full-on, full-budget science fiction show where TV networks have kind of taken over the world. Matt Frewer played a very powerful TV anchor who gets zapped into and becomes Max Headroom. And it had great special effects. It was about rebellion. It was about revolution. And it had all these great sci-fi, kind of very Blade Runner-esque elements to it. And hey, listen, my buddy Joe and I loved it. He had them all on VHS.
He taped them all.
We loved that show. And it was like solid science fiction. And I don't know what the budget was for the show, but they put it to good use because the show looked great. Like the cinematography, the production design, costumes, and especially the special effects looked really, really great. And it didn't last at all. Like, it lasted for one season, like in 87. And, but man, we watched every, Joe and I watched every episode of that. Hey, listen, come over, let's watch some Max Headroom, man. And, it was a great show, like a really, really terrific science fiction show.
It sounds awesome.
If I'm not mistaken, Shout Factory released the entire series.
I was just about to say, I'm trying to see if it's still available.
Because Shout Factory, if I remember correctly, because that's got a very, very, very small, but very, very passionate fan base. And hey, listen, Joe and I were we were the co-presidents of the fan club of that show.
Really?
No, I didn't. I'm saying we could have been, but we weren't. But I mean, we loved that show. We hyped it to everybody, and it was not popular at all. Nobody really watched it. I think it cost too much money to justify being on with nobody watching it.
Yeah, and you can still get that all on DVD.
Okay, and that's from Shout Factory. Highly recommend it. So, really, really great show. Okay, we got to take a break because coming up are the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Feel like a surgeon. Like a surgeon, organ transplants are my line. Better give me all your gossamers. This patient's fading fast.
The genius that is Weird Al. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Yeah, Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200. That's the phone number. Who requested the weird one?
That's coming to us from Ike.
All right. Weird Al, who tore it up at Ravinia the other night. So, Weird Al, also a staple on MTV.
True.
And that's what we're talking about. Today marks the 38th anniversary of the maiden broadcast of MTV. April 1st, 1981 was when it all began. They launched the music television network, and it has since obviously evolved and morphed into other things, but not without changing pop culture as we know it and impacting impacting music in a huge way. And they also have done a ton of original programming on MTV, and that's what we're talking about right now. And then we're going to get to some of the most iconic music videos of all time. And if you want to jump in with any of your MTV memories, your favorite MTV shows, or your favorite videos, or VJs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. All right, Teen Wolf, which I did not watch, but I understand is supposed to be kind of serious and scary, unlike the movie, which was wacky.
Yeah, it's definitely a departure.
I did watch Scream for a little while.
That was all right.
Yeah, it was okay. It was okay. I watched it. One of the main reasons I stayed with it was because I really love Bex Taylor Klaus. I love her. I think she's great. And I liked her in that. And she was in that Haunted House movie where people get killed last year. Where it's like, oh, is this guy a killer or is he just part of the Haunted House? And I can't remember the name of the movie.
Wasn't
very good. Was called like Hell Village.
Oh, Hell House. No.
No, Hell House is a 70s movie. It was called A Night with Hell or Hell is There. Hey, you want to go to hell? It was something along those lines because it was about a group of teenagers who go into like this haunted house on I think it's on Halloween or something, and they're being scared by weird guys in masks and costumes. But one of them turns out to actually be a killer and starts killing them. It wasn't very good, but I love her very much, and so I went to see it because of her. And I love her because she's also on Arrow. She's also a regular on Arrow. Bex Taylor Klaus.
Hellfest.
There it is. That's it. Hellfest. But she's in that. But the reason why, where I first saw her, and I was so blown away by her performance, and I think she was only 13, she was on the second season, or maybe the first season. She was on the first season of The Killing, and she played Bullet, this sort of homeless punky girl. And she was so good on it, and nobody knew who she was, and I had her on the show. We contacted her, and I said like this girl is unbelievable, and I had her on the show, and she's from the South, and she's like she was like 13 when I interviewed her, maybe 14. I think she's maybe like 18 or 19 now.
Well, she's only not even a year younger than me,
so she's 24.
Yeah, she's 24.
Okay, so. Then she was about 14 when I interviewed her.
Yeah.
Because this was the first season of The Killing. And the first time I saw her playing Bullet on that show, I just was like, this is a special talent. And I think she's great. Anyway, I had her on the show, and she was young. She hadn't done a lot of interviews, and she kept calling me sir. Yes, sir. Because she's from the South.
Yeah.
And I was like, you're making me feel real old. But she's, if you don't know who she is, she's great. And if you've never seen season one of The Killing, you should. Actually, you should watch all three seasons of The Killing because they're all great. But she was a standout, and I loved having her on the show. And I only wish her the best in her career because I think she's extraordinarily talented. But I did watch Scream. I didn't watch Teen Wolf, though.
Mm-hmm.
The television series of Teen Wolf is loosely based on the 1985 film of the same name. The series was created by Jeff Davis for MTV and stars Tyler Posey in the role of Scott McCall. He's been bitten by a werewolf, and the series revolves around how he is coping with the effect that this has had on his life. The series premiered June 5th, 2011, and after the MTV Movie Awards that same year. In 2016, the cast announced that the sixth season would be the last. They revealed this at the 2016 Comic-Con. The series finale aired on the 17th. So there's that. Headbangers Ball is next. We mentioned Headbangers Ball. Although MTV made a move away from music programs that they aired, Headbangers Ball was one series that retained an element of music. The music program aired on MTV and its sister channels and consisted of heavy metal videos. It first aired on April 18th, 1987. However, the relevance of the program came into question when other genres of music became more popular, including grunge, rap, and alternative rock. This led to the show being canceled. It was later reintroduced on MTV2 8.5 years later as heavy metal rose into popularity once again. It's now only shown on the network's website. Okay. How about this? How about Viva La Bam? I loved Viva La Bam. Bam Margera is one of my favorite of all the Jackasses. And I loved Viva La Bam. I thought it was so funny. It was essentially Bam, you know, just terrorizing his family. Well, he did that on Jackass as well, but this was an entire show that was dedicated to just that. His friends doing really crazy stuff and terrorizing his mother and father, essentially. So that's Viva La Bam. It's a spinoff from Jackass. It was a reality television series that starred Bam Margera, who was one of the major stars of Jackass, and also follows his friends and family. During each episode, the different cast members were given a mission that usually involved completing a stunt challenge or conducting a prank. It would often involve them recruiting the help of friends, families, and experts. Although there was some planning and organization involved in the events of the show, it was predominantly improvised. It ran for 5 seasons. Yeah, I loved Viva La Bam. If you're a regular listener to the show, you know how I feel about Jackass in all its incarnations. I watched every single episode of Viva La Bam and thought it was really, really funny. So then there's TRL, commonly known simply as TRL. It's Total Request Live is an MTV series that features popular music videos and featuring daily guests. TRL was often used as a promotional tool by American artists to get to showcase their music videos to show the audience, which is predominantly teens. When the series began, they would hold a viewer vote for the best videos and then would show the 10 most requested videos of the day. The show was canceled in 2008 but returned in 2017, including a daily countdown for the show, now as a weekly top five. Special guests added their favorite songs to the official playlist, and then viewers ranked these using social media before they were played on the show.
The revival of TRL was easily one of the worst television shows I've ever seen in my life.
I don't remember. Was Carson Daly back?
No, it was. They had more hosts. One of them, I probably shouldn't name, was from actually local Chicago radio, and I used to work with him. And it was just an insufferable dude.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it was awful. And
I don't have an idea who you're talking about. You'll have to tell me off the air.
Yeah, yeah. But he took the job at TRL, and it was unbearable. And I kind of laughed because he was a jerk to me when I was working with him.
So oh, okay.
I was like, all right, cool. But you know who is cool on MTV? Doma T'Pongo.
Oh, yes.
He's very cool on MTV. I love him.
Yeah, he's cool. All right, let's take a break here. We got weather, and then we'll come back, and we're talking a few more of the original MTV shows, and then we're going to bust out the most iconic music videos of all time. We're celebrating the 38th anniversary of the beginning of MTV, August 1st, 1981. It all started. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Tell me you're full drunk. Eat it, eat it, eat it. Get yourself an egg and beat it. Have some more chicken, have some more pie. It doesn't matter if it's boiled or fried. Just eat it,
eat it.
Just eat it, just eat it,
eat it.
Just eat it. Woo! Your table manners are a crying shame. You're playing with your food to sing some kind of game. Now if you start to death, you'll just have yourself to blame. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How's it going? We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m., as I am during every weekday morning from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. I will, however, not be on tomorrow morning, Friday morning, and I will also not be on Monday morning. Long weekend for me, busy weekend for me, hosting events and being a part of the Flashback Weekend Horror Convention at the Crown Plaza Hotel at O'Hare in Rosemont. Get your tickets and see a schedule right now, flashbackweekend.com. Unbelievable guests, really cool events, great activities, unbelievable horror merchandise in a great vendor's room, and parties and food and drink, and you can check out the great Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant as well. But check out the schedule and the tickets at flashbackweekend.com. Right now we're talking about MTV and the MTV original TV shows, and then we're going to get into some iconic videos. Ridiculousness is next, it's hosted by Rob Dyrdek with Sterling Stilo Brim and Michelle Westcoast as co-hosts. First aired on August 29th, 2011. It features viral videos of people doing ridiculous things, such as stunts that go wrong. I think it's really entertaining and very funny. Very funny. I think Dyrdek is a great host on that show. I think Stilo and Chanel Westcoast add a lot to it too.
Almost in the pantheon of great, like, modern now MTV stuff.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And like I said, it's on almost 24 hours during the weekend.
So you'll never miss an episode. Yeah.
Liquid Television. I used to love Liquid Television on MTV. It was one of the original cartoons. The first season aired on BBC Two in collaboration with MTV. The series was an opportunity for independent animators to get their creations onto television. Singled Out next. This dating game aired between 95 and 98. Original hosts were Chris Hardwick and Jenny McCarthy, and then Carmen Electra replaced McCarthy when she got her own sitcom. 50 men, 50 women would compete for a date from the main contestant, who was a member of the opposite sex. The show was divided into sections. And the people it would be eliminated in each round. Pimp My Ride with Exhibit.
Yeah. Oh man,
I loved that show.
It was the best.
I loved Pimp
it was
My
the
Ride.
Best. West Coast Customs.
I used to like a lot of those shows. What was the one where it wasn't Pimp My Ride, but it was another one where we would take somebody's car and they didn't know it was gone, and they would like customize it. There were like three or four of those shows. There was Pimp My Ride was one of them, but they were on other shows. There were other networks that had them too.
Yeah.
But Pimp My Ride was great. And then of course we were talking about The Real World. That's mentioned next. Okay. Osbournes. What can you say about this show? Legendary. Hilarious. This reality series followed the Osbournes family, which consisted of rocker dad Ozzy, music manager mom Sharon, and their two kids, Kelly and Jack. Well, two of their kids.
Yeah, the other one opted out.
Yeah, Amy did not be a part of the show. That aired March 5th, 2002, and it was the most viewed series on MTV ever during its first season. It aired 52 episodes, finishing in 2005. It showed the ups and downs of the family's lives. The show also featured some family staff, their friends, and other family members. They had a wide fan base, as their antics were very entertaining to watch. That show was great, and it was a phenomenon when it first started airing. Mm-hmm. Everybody was watching The Osbournes, and I mean, it was hysterical. And I've got all the seasons on DVD.
With the uncensored?
Yeah, but I don't like it uncensored.
Yeah, because it's not funny that way.
The beeping is funnier.
It's so much funnier.
It's the because you have the option. Luckily, on the DVD, you have the option to watch the censored version with the beeps.
Mm-hmm.
And I recommend that people just watch it with the censored version with the beeps because it's hilarious.
By the way, that show you were thinking of is called Overhauled.
That's it.
And that's coming to us from Greg in Lamont.
Overhauled. That was a great show. MTV Unplugged. Great season. A great series of that. There were some great ones. I mean, obviously, I think the most legendary one would be Nirvana. But yeah, I loved MTV Unplugged. I thought it was great. Pearl Jam one was great too.
Bob Dylan had a surprisingly good one.
Yeah. Punk'd. Loved Punk'd. I loved Punk'd. Ashton Kutcher and Jason Goldberg created this series for MTVs. It was similar to Candid Camera TV's Bloopers and Practical Jokes. The term punked referred to someone being the victim of a practical joke. And some of them were so hilarious. The one with Zach Braff, I where he almost killed the kid who he thought was spray painting his car, like his Porsche. But they switched out the cars like it was a different Porsche, and he caught this kid spray painting him, and he almost killed him. Did you watch Punk'd?
I wasn't a religious watcher.
Yeah.
I was more interested in watching like Viva La Bam. Viva La Bam was like my show on MTV during that era.
So Punk'd though, did you see the one where they come and repossess everything in Justin Timberlake's house?
Yeah, that's.
Oh my God.
That.
Oh man, I was cry laughing during that one.
There was some, and they had some like relatively the people who would become a little bit famous later playing like some of the roles.
Oh,
like,
Dax Shepard. That's how we got.
One.
Yeah, Dax Shepard. That's how we got his start.
I feel like Breckin Meyer sometimes.
No, he Maybe was too he was well. Too known. Fam- no, he was too well. Yeah, yeah, he was too
then,
well. Known,
but definitely Dax.
Dax no, Dax, like, Dax Shepard, without question, got his start on Punk'd.
Was it him that did the JT one?
He was part of it. I mean, he was part of a lot of them. One of the reasons why I like that show is because I normally don't like pranks. Like, but I like them when it's celebrities that are being pranked. For some reason, I find that okay.
Yeah. The only thing that I didn't like about Punk'd was, honestly, Ashton Kutcher. I couldn't
well,
stand
yeah,
him. He was just such a douche.
Yeah. No. I totally understand. I can totally understand that. But I thought the show was funny. You know, I love the episode where they tried to punk him. They tried to punk Ashton Kutcher, and he was on it right away.
You could smell it from a mile away.
Celebrity Deathmatch, which we mentioned earlier. Daria.
Love it.
Yep. Fantastic. Reoccurring character. And then here are the top two shows. Number two is Jackass.
Of course.
And I would have actually put that. Well, you know what? No, this is right. Because number one is Beavis and Butthead. And that's the greatest show that's ever been on MTV. But I really love Jackass, obviously. But yeah, you can't deny Beavis and Butthead. You can't. And the genius of Mike Judge. I like when they brought it back, when they did the second, you know, the second incarnation of it, where they were making fun of like Jersey Shore and stuff.
Yeah.
Because at that point, MTV had stopped showing as many videos,
mm-hmm.
so it was Beavis and Butthead making fun of the reality shows that they were showing, which was genius.
Yeah, and it was the birth of Daria was originally a character on Beavis and Butthead, yep. And so was Hank Hill.
Yep. Frog Baseball. We can thank Frog Baseball for all that, because that was the very first Beavis and Butthead short was Frog Baseball, which I believe was on Liquid Television. I believe debuted on Liquid Television. All right, let's break. We're talking MTV. It's the anniversary of the first MTV broadcast. 312-981-7200. Your MTV memories. We're gonna bust through some of the most iconic music videos of all time right after the news, which is next.
Never used a phone booth. Never seen my toes. When I'm going to the movies, I take up seven rows because I'm fat, fat, I'm fat. Shimmy, really, really fat. You know I'm fat, fat, I'm fat. You know I'm really fat. You know I'm fat, fat, I'm fat. Come on, really, really you fat. Know. Don't you call me pudgy.
That's right. Weird Al. Genius. Weird Al with Fat. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We are here until 5 o'clock. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah! So we only get one song for the next request instead of three, because we've only got one break left. So there you go. We'll do it again next Thursday, though. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Today is the 38th anniversary of the beginning of MTV. August 1st, 1981, it all began. And now we're going to bust out some of the more iconic music videos of all time. Let's bust into a few of these. Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen, the imagery itself, all of that. That was 1975, and that was before, you know, like, videos were being played, like, on a regular basis, and it was a promotional video, you know, that was basically just made to promote the songs, but obviously there was not a lot of places it was being played. Wuthering Heights by Kate Bush. She just had a birthday.
Mm-hmm.
She's 60. I believe she turned 60, Kate Bush. She's awesome. Thriller by Michael Jackson, 1983. Obviously a classic.
John Landis.
John Landis directed it. Yep. The late, great Vincent Price providing the wacky sort of rap in the middle of it, if you want to call it that. How about this one, Take On Me by A-ha.
Oh, my God.
Legendary. So that they're in the... It's a mix of live action and pencil sketch animation. A-ha.
I just have no idea how they would have achieved that at that time. Probably rotoscoping, right?
I would think so, yeah. Yeah. When Doves Cry by Prince, 1984. Great video. Oh, I love this. This is one of my favorite videos. This is one of my favorite. Don't Come Around Here No More by Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, which is the Alice in Wonderland sort of takeoff, where he's the Mad Hatter. And Alice is a big cake. She turns into a cake at the end, and everybody is chopping pieces of her and eating her.
Oof.
Have you not seen this video?
No.
Oh, man, it's great.
Okay, I was never really huge into Tom Petty. Like, I respected him.
Yeah.
But I think, what year was that?
85.
85. Hmm.
I love Tom Petty. I think he's great. And that video is really, that's a great video. Very memorable one. Sledgehammer by Peter Gabriel, 1986. Legendary claymation, pixelation, stop motion animation, all put together. Considered one of the most innovative videos of the time. Whitney Houston, I Want to Dance with Somebody Who Loves Me, from 1987. I don't understand what's so special about that video. It says here, the video starts in black and white. Whitney Houston finishes a show and heads backstage. Then the scene begins to shift between Houston in brightly colored dresses and makeup in various scenes. Okay. Oh, here we go. Opposites Attract by Paula Abdul from 1988, featuring the one and only animated MC Scat Cat. won a Grammy for Best Music Video. Opposites Attract, Paula Abdul. The one and only MC Scat Cat.
Who thought that was a good idea?
Apparently it was, because it won a Grammy and it was a very popular video, you know?
I do. The only cultural context I have for that was that it was parodied by Family Guy.
Oh, okay.
They do like a bit with it. I was like, what is this? Why is Paula Abdul here?
Yeah, it's funny because, like, between Family Guy and The Simpsons, if you're not caught up on some of your more obscure pop culture references, you only know them from either Family Guy or The Simpsons. Like a Prayer by Madonna. Great video. Real controversial, it got her canned from the Pepsi campaign.
Is that a Fincher?
That's a good question. It might be. It might be.
Because I know he definitely did Vogue.
Yeah. And he did... I don't know if he did Vogue. I know he did Express Yourself. Like a Prayer was a terrific video, but it was really funny because there was a lot of controversy surrounding that video because of the religious imagery and some of the other stuff that was in the video, and it got her Pepsi campaign cost her the Pepsi campaign because it's like Pepsi's like, oh, let's get Madonna to sell Pepsi for us, like you're gonna be like, that's gonna be a safe choice, like like Madonna's not gonna do something like Madonna's not gonna do something crazy or maybe controversial or different that may in fact have an impact on her selling your product.
Yeah, it was directed by Mary Lambert.
Oh, Mary Lambert.
Yeah,
yeah.
Who did
Pet Sematary?
Hmm.
Yeah. If I could turn back time by Cher. From 1989, she's on the USS Missouri with a bunch of Navy members present, and the only thing that anybody remembers about that video is her outfit, because she's wearing like a sheer bodysuit with a leather jacket, and you just see her butt the whole video. Love Shack by the B-52s, also 1989. That's a great video. And it was the first, did you know this? It was the first big break for RuPaul.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's rad.
Rhythm Nation by Janet Jackson, also from 1989. A black and white Rhythm Nation video is known for its military-style outfits, warehouse setting, and choreography, which has inspired numerous dance routines since that video was released. It's a legendary video that's been honored countless times. It won a Grammy as part of the long-form video project titled Rhythm Nation 1814 Film. I saw Janet Jackson on that tour. It was pretty great. You Can't Touch This, MC Hammer from 1990. It's real simple. It's mostly clips that show him and others doing his signature moves, like the running man and the hammer dance, and, of course, the hammer pants. You Can't Touch This. Iconic video. These are videos that popped up on MTV in heavy, heavy, heavy rotation. And we're talking about it on the anniversary of the first broadcast. Nothing Compares to You by Sinead O'Connor. Most of the video is a close-up shot of Sinead's face as she sings the song. Two tears roll down her cheek at the end. The video does feature a couple of clips of her walking in Paris. But the emotional close-ups are the most striking part. She was the first woman to win Video of the Year at the MTV Video Music Awards for that song. So, classic video. Nothing Compares to You. Man, that song was huge. Of course, written by Prince. Here's Glenn on WGN. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, good morning, Nick.
Morning.
Hope you have a nice weekend.
Thank you.
Murray Head, One Night in Bangkok.
Right.
I like it. I just watched it the other day on YouTube, and yeah, the music's good. The radio kind of holds up, but yeah, I turn it up whenever I hear that song.
All right, well, you might want to then get the soundtrack for Chess, because that song is from a Broadway musical.
You know, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, it's from the Broadway musical Chess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Will do.
Okay. All right.
Again, have a nice weekend.
Thank you. Flashback weekend, everybody. It's going to be a blast. 1991, Smells Like Teen Spirit,
mm-hmm,
by Nirvana. Considered one of the greatest songs of all time, the video is a testament to the song as a teen rock anthem and performing in a high school pep rally where the cheerleaders have anarchy symbols on their chests. Yeah, I remember when that song broke, man. God. I was dating a girl at the time, Leslie Presley, and she was not into that kind of. I was into. I liked a lot of hard stuff at that time, and she was not into it. But then, I knew that something had happened when she bought Nevermind. I knew that there was something.
Something clicked.
Yeah, something because this was not a girl who would ever listen to that kind of stuff. But she loved it, and she bought Nevermind, and I was like, okay,
yeah. That's the kind of thing that doesn't really happen a lot anymore.
Yeah.
Everybody's kind of in their own subculture doing their own thing.
Crying by Aerosmith. That was one of the first ones that had Alicia Silverstone in it. She catches her boyfriend cheating, and she ends up shoving him out of the car and leaving him in the dust and goes rebellious. She gets a tattoo and a belly button piercing. And then eventually she stands on the edge of an overpass preparing to jump. When her ex shows up with a bunch of cops, she leaps, hangs over the cars on a rope, and flips off her ex. Yeah, I just remember the feeling a little uncomfortable when his daughter was in the videos. Like screwing around with Alicia Silverstone and stuff. But yeah, that series of videos they did with Alicia Silverstone, they were incredibly popular and absolutely iconic. So, all right, more of the most iconic videos ever. This time, on the anniversary of the beginning of MTV. We'll get back to that. Again, if you want to join us, talk, text 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200.
She makes the bed.
And he steals the covers.
She likes it neat.
And he makes a mess. I take it easy.
Baby, I get upset. She's got the money.
And he's always broke.
Did somebody really request this?
No, I was trying to find one of the songs that they requested, but it was not available.
Oh, okay. Did somebody request Paula Abdul?
No.
Oh, okay. So you just played this because of DJ Scat Cat.
Yeah, had to find something.
Okay. Or MC Scat Cat? Yeah, MC Scat. No, DJ or MC? I can't remember. Whatever. Welcome back, everybody. We're here until 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich coming up with the opening bell. Steve Cochran coming up at 6, and also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. MTV had its maiden broadcast on this date in 1981. 38 years later, it's completely changed as a network. It doesn't do what it started out to do. But since then, it's become a cultural and musical force that has changed the face of music and pop culture. And we're going through some of the more iconic videos that were shown during the days. Everybody Hurts by R.E.M. Yeah, I can't stand that song. I can't stand R.E.M., actually, but I can't stand that song. Buddy Holly by Weezer. That's, of course, the Happy Days, where they're at Arnold's in Happy Days performing. Waterfalls by TLC. F. Gary Gray directed that one. I prefer Creep because I like them in their silk pajamas. Scream by Michael and Janet Jackson. I love that video. I do. I really love that video. Mark Romanek directed that video. Mark Romanek would go on to direct a few movies, including Static, A One Hour Photo. Mark Romanek directed.
Love One Hour Photo.
But he directed some really amazing videos. One of my favorite videos of all time is Bedtime Story by Madonna, which I just think is one of the coolest videos I've ever seen, still to this day. Wannabe by the Spice Girls. Ironic by Alanis Morissette, even though she doesn't know what the definition of ironic is. Here's Jim on WGN. Hi, Jim.
Good morning, Nick.
Hey.
Hey, one of the earliest videos right after MTV started, because I watched it from day one, was Mike Nesmith with Lucy, Ramona, and Sunset Sam. And it was two girls on roller skates in L.A. and a bodybuilder in a Speedo hustling watches and stuff on the street corner. And it was a funky tune. It was really cool. And I believe the wrestler, what was his name now? The Hulk.
Hulk Hogan?
Hulk Hogan walking around in a red Speedo and these two girls checking him out. But he was there, you know, hustling watches and stuff on the street.
Did you really blank on the name Hulk Hogan as a wrestler? Is it too early? Is it too early?
You know what? I've been working all night, so okay. I'm going home now, and I'm fried.
All right. Okay. All right, Jim. Thanks.
Thanks.
All right.
Well, I do love that he said, what's a wrestler? You know, the Hulk. You mean Hulk Hogan?
Like, you can blank it. I mean, when someone says professional wrestler, the first name that should pop into your head is Hulk Hogan. I mean, if you're not a big wrestling follower. Because for me, if someone says professional wrestling to me, Ric Flair, that's the first person that pops into my head. But like Hulk Hogan is the most popular wrestler in the history of pro wrestling. That's like that's like the line reading that Tony Shalhoub does in Barton Fink, as I mentioned before, one of my favorite line readings in the history of line readings. And that is it's Wallace Beery. It's a wrestling picture. What do you need, a roadmap? What do you think this is? Gone with the Wind? The movie takes place in 1941. It takes place a year and a half after Gone with the Wind was released. What do you think? Is it Gone with the Wind? Here's Jeff on WGN. Hey, Jeff.
Hello. Hey, Nick. Long time no talk.
Yeah, what's up?
How about Land of Confusion by Genesis?
Yeah. Yeah, Yeah, that was a crazy video. Well, I can't remember the name of the split. No, what was the name of the company that did that? It was a British TV show that did the puppets. It was a political British show that did the puppets, and their troupe was a name, and they used those guys, the creators of that, to do the video.
Spitting Image.
Spitting Image. That's right. Jeff, thanks for the call. Doc says, Nick, pack it up, pack it in, let me begin. How about Jump Around by House of Pain? Dave from Roscoe Village says, I love Safety Dance. All right.
What, do you not like the Safety Dance?
It's the Safety Dance. I don't... It's the Safety Dance.
But you can dance if you want to.
Yeah.
You can leave your friends behind.
The Rolling Stones, 708 area codes, could be the worst video, but maybe the best video is Waiting on a Friend by the Rolling Stones. It really is a stupid video. But 847, Hot for Teacher, I love that video. I love that video. 847 says Duran Duran Rio. Yeah, man. Simon Le Bon sitting on the end of that yacht singing. 773 area code. What about Runaway Train with the pictures of the missing persons? Yeah, pretty iconic. Soul Asylum, right?
Yep.
Oh, my dad's learning how to text.
Well, he actually called me.
Oh, he called you. Okay. But he's learning how to text. He's not real good at texting. Got a new phone. He had to get a smartphone.
Oh.
And he's barely getting used to it now.
That's all right.
He went from flip phone, basic flip phone, to now smartphone, and he's starting to get the hang of it. Anyway, he said, how about Money for Nothing by Dire Straits? Classic. Absolute classic. All right, let's fly through some of these real quick. Virtual Insanity by Jamiroquai. One of my favorite videos ever.
Bring back that fuzzy hat.
With the moving floor.
So cool.
And the big bug crawling around on the floor. My Hero by the Foo Fighters.
Directed by Dave Grohl.
Yep. The Boy Is Mine by Brandy and Monica. All-Star by Smash Mouth. Somebody once told me.
Well, the worst part is the video is like a promo for Mystery Men.
Yeah, that's true. Waiting for Tonight by Jennifer Lopez. I don't even remember the video. My Name Is by Eminem. Bye 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 by NSYNC. That's when they're puppets, right? On the string.
Loved it.
All the Small Things, Blink 182.
Yeah.
Survivor by Destiny's Child. Weapon of Choice by Fatboy Slim. That's Christopher Walken dancing around. I love that video.
Spike Jones, my favorite music video of all time.
Lady Marmalade by from the stupid Moulin Rouge.
You leave them alone.
Oh God, Clint Eastwood by Gorillaz. That's
awesome.
That's great. Complicated by Avril Lavigne. I happen to be a fan of Avril Lavigne.
I know. I figured you would.
I happen to be kind of a big fan of Avril Lavigne. Hey Ya by Outkast.
Classic.
Yep. Bring Me to Life by Evanescence. That's a really. I'm not a big. She's got a good voice though, man.
What's her name? Amy Lee?
Yeah, she's got a really, really good voice. Now, the music's not my scene,
super dumb.
But man, she's got a really tremendous voice. Seven Nation Army by the White Stripes. That video makes me nuts with the things moving. And
I can see that.
Toxic by Britney Spears. I love that video. So I directed this radio play, and we did it in front of a microphones and everything, and so... one of the things that happened all the time was somebody's cell phone would go off. And so we made the cell phone, the tone, the toxic song. And every time it got a laugh, every single time. And then we got to mention this one really quick. Here It Goes Again by OK Go. The treadmill choreography on that one. Classic.
And changed YouTube forever.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so there's some iconic videos. We talked about videos because it is the 38th anniversary of the beginning of MTV. Celebrate wisely.